first video of his that really woke me up was the video he did on the World Trade Organization protests in Seattle.
Yeah.
When he showed that there was these groups of masked men who dressed in military uniforms with military issue shoes. And they all ran around in this peaceful protest for the World Trade Organization and started smashing things and lighting things on fire and creating chaos, which allowed the police to then move in. Then these people all holed up in one house. They negotiated with the police and they were all released.
While the labor march was large and peaceful, it was the unexpected violence that captured most of the media attention.
Innocent bystanders walking along the sidewalk are getting tear gassed. And while the governor made assurances this morning things are back to normal, they're definitely not.
The state of emergency was just an hour old.
The state of emergency that they've been training for so long to deal with. Who was behind it? What caused it in Seattle? In December of 1999, the World Trade Organization meeting, the riots, the supposed riots in the military and police working together to keep the public safe from all that evil rabble. In recent years, the WTO, since its inception, has come across incredible opposition worldwide because of its obvious authoritarian implications. That's a hard thing to deal with when you've got highly motivated people that have real complaints and valid issues. How do you deal with it? Well, you simply call in your friends.
Nobody was directly confronting the police. No one laid hands on anybody. Nobody touched property. And they were arrested anyway solely because the WTO comes to town. China and other foreign governments wander in here. And now they're gassing everybody. What did you see here? Did you see any violence?
In downtown Seattle today, the First Amendment ended at 4th and Spring. Not only could you not say what's on your mind, you couldn't wear it.
Sir, let's not get into a big scuffle over it. Okay.
This man had an anti-WTO sticker on his backpack.
He took it off my...
There are no protests down here. You saw what happened yesterday to your city. We're not going to let it happen again, okay?
Not allowed to have a sticker.
Not here.
The left coast communists posing as anarchists under Delta Force direction.
Broke windows at the Gap. They're smashing windows at McDonald's. They're dumping over garbage cans.
What's wrong with this picture? If the police are supposedly there to protect the public and property, then why? Why did state police, Seattle police, as well as the feds, stand back and allow the anarchists in mass to run around and throw bottles at police, cones, rocks, you name it, and assault private property as well as members of the general public? You see, the anarchists were actually given their own operations base.
7 days after they commandeered this downtown building, anarchists walked away without a word from police.
It feels to me like we won.
The building is owned by the Low Income Housing Institute, a private nonprofit that is in large part funded by the city and is now working with the city to house the anarchists.
All started by 30 to 40 anarchists running around, burning and beating and smashing and stealing. And the police, like dogs at the end of a chain, a Rottweiler you've been slapping, suddenly had their leashes released, and with wanton abandon, they rampaged out in a berserk fashion and attacked old ladies, store owners, you name it. And then they got to ship everybody to the FEMA center. That's right. FEMA was helping during this learning process for everyone.
We've seen 400 people arrested. The facility at Sandpoint, we're told, is full. We're told they did not create another one at Boeing Field.
So why didn't the police department arrest the anarchists when they moved out of that building? Well, that's a question a lot of people are asking, especially since the West Precinct is just down the block. We asked the police department this weekend. We asked them again today. They still haven't returned our call with an answer.
It's a staged, managed operation. These same anarchists have been used in Washington, D.C. to create a state of emergency. For a day, they allow them to spray paint pig on police guards and attack officers. And then the police are released once they're at fever pitch. They are useful tools to neutralize the general population's ability to engage in political protest.
InfoWars.com.
Ultimate Fish Oil is not just a supplement, but a statement.
Morning. Morning.
Not only can Ultimate Fish Oil from InfoWarsStore.com help your heart, mind, and joints, but it keeps InfoWars on the air.
Morning. Morning.
Your heart is the engine of your life, and Ultimate Fish Oil is the premium fuel it craves.
Morning. Morning. Morning.
Ultimate Fish Oil is your cognitive clarity captain. The DHA in this formula is a foundational stone for brain health. Ultimate Fish Oil is your joint health general. The soothing reduction in inflammation ensures you'll feel invincible in the info war. InfoWars has never wavered from its mission, and with Ultimate Fish Oil, neither will you. Step up to the plate, nourish your body, and nourish the fight for a future where the new world order is defeated. Get it now at InfoWarsStore.com.
It's Wednesday, August 13th in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this scene, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this morning from Austin, Texas. It's Wednesday, the 13th of August, 2025, and we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot of goings on. We'll be joined by Brandon Weikert in the third hour, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. He is, of course, a geopolitical analyst, and we'll be getting into what to expect with the Russia summit happening in Alaska at a military base. He's been pretty dead on accurate as to the developments of the Ukraine war over the last 2 years, so we're excited to see what he thinks the outcome of this will be. We'll talk about the Ukraine war and the potential for peace. But of course, the major story today continues to be the rollout of the National Guard on American city streets to deal with the out-of-control crime problem. People, again, having a lot of trouble, you know, wrapping their minds around this. Which, again, it's just so simple. Really could not be more simple if you let the criminals in your city run rampant, kill and rob everybody, then somebody else has to step up and do your job for you. So it's really not that complicated. It's really not that hard. We got lots of stories about this. People just absolutely outraged that they can't behave however they want with absolutely no repercussions. Now, there's going to be repercussions, and the point of the repercussions is to get you to change your behavior, not to impose the repercussions. Do you understand this? Do you understand? Like, we've got stories today about Donald Trump. He's going to be scooping up the homeless and throwing them into asylums. Obviously, I don't think that's true. But if it was, I guess the advice would be, don't camp on the sidewalk. There you go. Problem solved. Just don't camp on the sidewalk. If you got to camp, do it outside of the city boundaries. Is that really so hard to do? Or just like go under an overpass somewhere. Like, nobody cares if people are camped out somewhere where they're not bothering anybody and they're not in anybody's way. It's fine. These people are putting up 15-person tents in the park. I mean, the ones in Austin, the one that me and Owen walked around in, they had a freaking swimming pool in their camp. Not exaggerating. I'm not being facetious. There was a literal inflatable swimming pool filled with water at the homeless camp. Okay, that's not acceptable, and you can't do that. You can't just pop up a little hobo motel in the middle of a park where children play, you know, to shoot heroin. You just have to stop doing that or else you get arrested. So that really is like, I mean, it's just a classic meme of like there's a kid laying there and it looks like his head is being stomped on, but then it zooms out and it's just his own hand. That is the Democrats at this point. It's just they are oppressed by their own inability to just behave correctly. They're being oppressed by their unwillingness to just follow basic laws and have just a modicum of respect for the people around them. They can't do it. They can't do it. And it's the same across the board. Illegal immigration. Oh my God, you can't send people to Alligator Alcatraz. This is so brutal. You can't send people to El Salvador. You can't, you know, arrest people on the street with masked goons chasing people down and throwing them into vans. It's like, no, we can do that. And what you can do to avoid all of that is just go home. Okay. So you want to stay here. You want to break our laws. You want to ignore the fact that you know this is coming. And then you want to get mad when the inevitable consequence falls down on your head. Just go home. Just go home. It's unbelievably simple. Okay. Same thing with crime. Just stop committing crime and you don't have to worry about being thrown into prison. I mean, is this really so hard? Is this really so hard, folks? So yeah, we'll touch on all of that. I just put some videos in there too that we'll go to. We've got the upcoming Russia-Ukraine summit. We've got a lot of discussion about the inevitable reignition of the Iran-Israel conflict. That is to say, there's a lot of people talking right now as if the second Israeli war on Iran will erupt at any moment. And I guess the question I have is, what's Iran doing? What is Iran doing? Why do I just keep feeling the same thing about all of it? Like, same thing that we have with, you know, the likes of Beto O'Rourke and others saying, hey, when we get back into office, we're going to go nuts, y'all. When we get back into office, it's no holds barred, no rules, retribution. We're going to throw all the Republicans in prison. And all the Republicans are sitting there like, sure, buddy. And it's like, no, you take this seriously. What is going, why are you not taking this seriously? They're telling you what they're going to do. And then you're just waiting for them to do it. Why, but why though? And same thing with Iran and Israel. It's like, if I was Iran. Sorry, what was I saying? Sorry, I just went off into a fantasy world. Sorry, I just, sound of air raid sirens, smell of napalm. Sorry, what was I saying? If I was Iran and I heard Israel is readying an imminent attack, why wouldn't you just start raining missiles down on him? What is happening here? And yeah, I was looking back again at some of the early coverage that we were doing after October 7th. And I'll say we got a lot of stuff right. And the predictions that I personally got wrong was because I was right. Is this confusing? In other words, early on, like October 9th and 10th, 2023, it was like, all right, if Israel goes into Gaza, Hezbollah is going to hit them from the north. And that's really going to, like, they can't handle that. They can't handle this war in the south with Gaza while being attacked with full force from Hezbollah. Like, that's going to split their forces and they're really going to be in trouble. And that would have been true if Hezbollah really launched a massive, large scale attack. Why didn't they? God only knows. I don't know. I don't know why they didn't. They should have. I think the obvious, you know, exclamation point of that is that their entire leadership got wiped out. The pager attack, the airstrikes. Why didn't you go into Israel when they went into Gaza? That's what you said you were going to do, and then you didn't do it. And then all of your leadership got murdered. And now the Americans are pressuring the Lebanese state to disarm you entirely. So it's like, okay, my prediction was that Hezbollah was going to enter into the fight in a full force way. Because that was, in fact, the right strategic move to make. They didn't. So I was wrong in that prediction, but they were wrong to not do the attack because now they're all dead. Okay, same thing with Iran. And it's the same, it really is like this bizarre consistency of all of these various dichotomies where it's the same thing with Republicans and Democrats, where it's like, why does one side never take the initiative? Now, you might say, well, because if Iran just like launched a sudden attack against Israel, they would be seen as the aggressors and it would be really bad for them because they would be seen as this terrorist state just like randomly bombing. But like, is that not exactly what Israel and America did to Iran? Right? There was no like build up of like negotiations that crumble and then like war gets declared and then they both, no, Israel just launched attacks against Iran and like murdered all of their military leadership and assassinated all of their nuclear scientists and bombed all of their, you know, military sites. And they just did it one day out of nowhere. So again, I mean, unless I'm missing something, it's just like, if you're Iran and you've already been sneak attacked by Israel earlier this year, and then America joined in on the sneak attack, and now they're, I mean, clearly their goal is your ultimate removal and destruction. You know they're not going to stop. And so, like, part of me is like, why, like, so now they've just spent the last, what, 2 months or so, 2 or 3 months, rearming, resupplying their, you know, air defenses in the Iron Dome, you know, recalibrating their, you know, military activity. They've been able to lock down Gaza to an even greater degree. And so if you're Iran, like, A, why did you ever let up on Israel? I guess to avoid America getting involved, but again, I just don't get it. I don't get it. If I was Iran right now, I'd be launching missiles. I'd be taking out Haifa. I'd be destroying all of the Israeli warplanes that are sitting on the tarmac right now with my hypersonic unstoppable missiles. Like, what? Okay, but they're not. So we're all just going to wait until Israel launches another attack against Iran. I don't get it. I just don't get it, honestly. Why does one side always get the initiative and the other side is always responding, always, every single time? Again, it's just like the Israelis always attack first. Unless, of course, something like October 7th where Hamas attacks with Israeli permission in order to give them the ability to strike back. But, you know, we'll get into all of that and we'll look at, you know, where these signals are coming from that Israel will be attacking Iran. I mean, it's never been a question for me. It's always just a matter of when, not if, the war against Iran would be ginned up again. And we reported yesterday on the 400,000 Israeli reservists that have been called forth, ostensibly to invade Gaza. I'll tell you, even Gaza, I don't think you need 400,000 soldiers to take care of. That does sound a bit more like a Iranian operation to me. But we'll look into that. I just don't understand why all of Israel's enemies just don't do anything. It's very weird. Am I the only one? And the same thing with like Bashar al-Assad in Syria. You know, if he could go back in time, if he could see the way that his country was collapsed in 2 weeks and taken over by actual Islamic extremists that are at this very moment oppressing and brutally repressing the Shia and Alawite and Christian communities there in Syria, if he could see that, he would soon be ousted and end up working as an eye doctor in Russia somewhere. Do you think going back in time, he would have been quite so patient? And it really is the frustration of all of this. And it just goes back to anybody that studies history. History is decided almost entirely by initiative. It's all initiative. It's all who does the thing first. The classic phrase is like, who gets there firstest with the mostest, or there's some phrase like that. It's literally what it is. Julius Caesar is Julius. We still remember his name because he was impatient, because he was faster than everybody else. His armies marched faster. He reacted faster. He didn't wait for his enemies to attack him, so he felt justified. He crossed the damn Rubicon and he took over and he made himself emperor. And now, to this day, the leaders of Russia and Germany were named after him. Like, that's greatness. Napoleon, exactly the same thing. Always the fastest, always acting more aggressively, always taking the initiative, never waiting for permission, never waiting for the other person to move first, just acting first, forcing them to react to you over and over again. George Washington crossing the Delaware on Christmas. Was that a polite thing to do? Was that a fair thing to do? No, it was him seizing the initiative. It was him acting in a way that the enemy didn't expect to put him on his back foot and put him in the defensive. And it eventually led to the winning of the war. Throughout all of history, it's not about who has the most people or even who has the, you know, it absolutely has nothing to do with who has the better argument or who's actually right. Look at the Civil War for that one. No, it's about initiative. It's about who just does the thing to the other person. And for some reason, it's almost like we've been assigned roles where it's just like, okay, you're a Republican. That means you never do anything to seize the initiative. You never do anything out of the ordinary. You never do anything that hasn't been already well established by precedent. And Democrats, you get to do whatever the hell you want, whenever the hell you want, and put the Republicans on the back foot, in turmoil, on the defense constantly. Exact same dichotomy with, you know, Israel and its neighbors. Again, you could say October 7th would be a reversal of that, but that's only if you start the conflict there and you don't see October 7th as just another attack in the ongoing conflict between Israel and Gaza, which of course was like, yeah, occasionally Gaza would launch a few rockets at Israel, and then every couple of years, Israel would go in and like massacre thousands of them. And of course, the fact that October 7th wasn't a surprise in the first place and was Israel just granting itself the permission to do what it always wanted to do. So again, where is the initiative? Where is the aggressiveness on the other side? So we'll get into that. We'll talk about that. We'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 13th of August, 2025. Trump's takeover of Washington law enforcement begins as National Guard troops arrive. On August 11th through 13th, 2025, President Trump ordered federal forces and 800 National Guard troops to take control of Washington, D.C. Police Department to address crime. Trump declared a state of emergency, citing a crime emergency, despite official data showing violent crime fell 26% and carjackings dropped about 50%. Yes, despite the fact that D.C. has been fudging its crime statistics, they still are sending out police to deal with the very real crime that's happening at a increased clip observable by anybody with eyes. Attorney General Pam Bondi declared crime in D.C. is ending and ending today and called the Justice Department's cooperation with the city government productive. The deployment escalated tensions, sparking protests in D.C., reflecting concerns about federal overreach despite falling crime rates and legal authority allowing federal temporary control for 30 days. Again, Washington, D.C. was always meant to be a federal district. It was never meant to be an independent municipality. So I think that the correct move here is just to literally just dissolve the local government in D.C. and just actually have it taken over by an office of Congress. That is actually how it's supposed to be according to the Constitution, and that is how it should be. Meanwhile, judge orders Trump administration to restore part of UCLA's suspended funding. U.S. District Judge Rita Lynn ordered the Trump administration on Tuesday to restore part of the $584 million in frozen federal grants for UCLA science research. The freeze followed allegations that UCLA discriminated in admissions and failed to prevent anti-Semitism amid large protests last year. Yeah, I sort of mentioned this yesterday with Rex, and maybe we need to get into it a little bit more because this is something that I've referenced a lot, but I still don't think people know this story very well, that at UCLA Berkeley, there was a foreign-sponsored military attack on the Palestinians there. And I'm not kidding. It was an Israeli guy who brought over IDF soldiers to physically assault and attack the Palestinian protesters. That happened on UCLA campus, and absolutely no punishment was ever given to the people that started and carried out the vicious attack against peaceful protesters. So it's pretty far beyond just like, oh, they're anti-Semitic, and it's the exact opposite. You have peaceful Palestinian protesters breaking no laws, expressing their First Amendment, and then you have them set upon by military-trained foreigners working in a group, coordinated, sponsored, brought in from out of the city or out of state to carry out this vicious attack on peaceful protesters, and then the peaceful protesters get punished for it. Yeah, it's almost like they're the Gazans in this situation. Gee, it's almost like the same thing over and over. And of course, to me, the most frustrating part is that we take the blame for this. I don't know how many times I've heard since Trump got into office and started making all these cuts about the way these damn Republicans are putting everybody at risk by, you know, cutting scientific research. I've got friends and family where it's like, we have a friend who's a nurse and is going to school. I guess she's a doctor. I don't know. She's a smart lady. She's going to some, you know, higher level university and doing medical research into cancer or something, sounding important. And, you know, she just got her funding cut and her grants cut. And, you know, she wasn't working on transgenderism, right? She wasn't working on, you know, testing how much estrogen can be put in a Twinkie before it's detectable by taste. Like, these weren't, it was just like normal good things we should probably be doing as the world's foremost scientific, you know, powerhouse and industrial, you know, creative center. And so it's not that these, you know, research grants are too big. It's not that there's a problem with the grants themselves. They're purely being used as leverage to get the Israelis what they want. So we're causing American universities and American students and American scientists to suffer hugely as Israeli extortion. Not because we don't actually want the things to be done, just because it's a pain point that the federal government can twist its knife into to get concessions to make it even less friendly to Palestinians who are already being beaten half to death by IDF soldiers on the campus of UCLA. And then all of the scientists and all of the, you know, people that see this happening turn around and go, damn those Trump supporters, those conservatives and those Republicans. They're just anti-science and trying to, you know, shut down research because there's anti-intellectual. And it's like, we have nothing to do with this. We don't want this. We have nothing to do. Now, if you were talking about using that same method, that same pressure to get them to stop teaching courses about how white people are evil or stop the egregious manipulation of the incoming class demographics, and maybe you have an argument, but we're not benefiting from this. This isn't us. We don't want this. We never asked for this. It doesn't benefit us. It's not for us. It's entirely for Israel, but they do it through Trump, so we get the blame. So conservatives and Trump supporters get the blame. And then stupidest of all is that Trump supporters get tricked into taking credit for this. So stupid. So you've got UCLA letting Palestinians or pro-Palestinian protesters, you know, protest on their campus. Israel comes in, beats them half to death, takes away all their money, forces concessions, forces them to create offices of anti-Semitism so you can have a Jewish Inquisition on the campus. And then Trump supporters are out there going, well, that's what you get for messing with America. That's what you get for messing with Trump. You idiots. You're being used as absolute puppets to your own destruction.
Right now, for only 7 days, we're having the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. About to break it all down right now. For 1 week only, we have launched the biggest sale ever on collectible bullion, silver coins, and our amazing collectible knives at thealexjonesstore.com. The sale is Blades and Bullion Super Sale. Now, ladies and gentlemen, despite the fact that we're about to sell out of the remaining collectible coins that are limited edition, they'll never be made again, and our incredible World War II updated Spartan trench knife with a skull crusher and the brass knuckles and the 10-inch stainless steel razor-sharp double-edged blade and this incredible 6-inch battle dagger, despite the fact we're selling out, we are offering all of these products at up to 40% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if I went into a knife shop and I saw these knives for this price, and they weren't even inscribed with 1776 or Tip of the Spear or InfoWars, I would still get them because I'm a knife aficionado and I know the best. And the reason that is because these are the knives I love. These are the knives I think are the best. It took us over a year to get a supplier at a decent price with high quality for this bad boy right here. And it's selling out quick. Got an amazing inscription, Tip of the Spear with the Spartan. On the other side, InfoWars, a true piece of history with the high-tech scabbard sheath that hooks on your belt. Simply amazing. Now look at this bad boy. It goes great in your purse, great in your car, right on your side, high-tech sheath. Doesn't come out, but easily, there's a fallout, but easily pulls out. This won't run out of bullets. This will defend you and your family. It's grab a 1776 on one side, collectible, limited edition, Alex Jones signature on the other side. And it comes with this collectible gift case, makes an amazing gift as well. And then, as I was mentioning, look at these coins. There are only a few hundred left of each one of these. Only 5,000 were made of each. You've got, due to popular demand, Alex Jones on one side, InfoWars on the other. Then you've got one of my favorites, Paul Revere, his Midnight Ride, Our Lives, Our Fortune, and Our Honor, Declaration of Independence on the other. Then you've got the Tip of the Spear Spartan helmet and the Gadsden flag snake with the spear through the middle, Tip of the Spear. And then this one, they hold back only a few hundred of these. Even though these were available anymore, Trump, fight, 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 battle for the Republic, commemorating President Trump. All four of these coins are about to sell out. You can get them discounted individually or even bigger discount when you get all four together. Right now, part of the Blades and Bullion Super Sale. These are collectible. These are great prices. This knife right here sells for $100 in stores. We bought 5,000 of them. They're almost sold out, but it's selling to you for $78, and it funds the operation. Same thing with this. This knife sells all day for $150 in stores. We bought a whole bunch of them. So it's massively discounted to you. And you talk about defending yourself and your family, this is it. And you're also funding the Tip of the Spear and the information war while you do this, so you cannot lose. The only way you fail is not taking action at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get the Ultra Breath and Elite Blue, get the very best Irish Sea Moss, the very best Shilajit, the very best turmeric. It's all there, and it funds this operation. I cannot do this without you. I try to bring you really cool things that I think are amazing. The best supplements, you name it. So you buy it, you get it, you love it. It empowers you, and you're happy with what you did. You continue to support us. I want a long-term relationship with you. I want to thank those who support the broadcast. I want to encourage those of you who have been on the fence to take action now, get amazing products, and keep us on the air. Be part of history. Thank you so much.
Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I gotta admit, I'm a little bit disorganized today. That's only because my whole family's sick. Not to play a pity party here. I think we may have come down with something. Sort of a chain of events where my son swallowed a nickel or a penny or something. So we spent a Saturday evening or Friday night / Saturday morning in the hospital getting x-rays. And I think we may have caught something there. My whole family is, hugely sick. And so, I'm working on about 6 hours of sleep over the last two nights combined, trying to take care of them. And I'm teetering on the edge, but you should see them. It doesn't look good. And I credit my, not being sick to the supplements that I take. I take a heck of a lot of vitamins, and I just have the, I'm so close to, you know, that feeling when you're like, man, I'm real close to being sick right now. If I didn't take that nap yesterday, I'd be dead. Yeah, that was 3 a.m. on Friday or Saturday morning. He's fine. He's fine, everyone, but the family is sick, and I credit the supplements that I take to, you know, keeping me just on this side of healthy. However, that being said, my brain is still stuck in first gear. That's how it feels. You know how it feels if you ever drive a manual and you get stuck in first or second gear? You're like, I know I should be able to go faster, but I just can't. I just can't. So I'm going to take your calls today in the second hour. We have a lot of videos to play. I'm telling you, I was real close to throwing in the towel this morning. We're going to power through because I have a duty to fulfill. We're going to continue to talk about the day's news. And there's also just, it's just too much news. It's also freaking insane. We'll continue with the top stories here. In fact, grab some more videos and show you what's going on around the world. I know Alex covered this quite a bit. British cops wore jogging outfits to elicit catcalls and then arrested some men who hit on them, according to a report. From catcalls to the doghouse, female cops in England went undercover as joggers, wearing tight-fitting clothes in a bid to elicit catcalls and then arrested some of the men who hit on them, according to a report. The Surrey Police Department created a trial task force, which lasted about a month and led to 18 arrests, like offenses for sexual assault, harassment, and theft, the Telegraph reported. You know, there's nothing really I can say that can elucidate this more than Alex got into it. It's very simple. They are literally criminalizing basic normal human behavior while simultaneously ignoring the vicious, repugnant crisis of rape and crime that they themselves are facilitating with their immigration program. The dichotomy of this, the bizarre nature of this. I mean, if you were trying to decrease the birth rates, is this not exactly what you were doing? If you were trying to make a people go extinct, is this not how you would treat them? It's already at crisis level, the fact that people are just lonely. Like America, the UK, the numbers are staggering and horrifying. Where I don't even know what the statistics are these days, but basically there's no romance, there's no dating scene, there's no mingling, there's no, you know, societal pressure to get married and have kids. And so it's like, who even catcalls anymore? It's like, if you're catcalling women on the street, you should be given a medal. You should be given a medal and a trophy for resisting the psychological push to castrate you, to leave you as a gelded, a whimpering puddle, begging for permission for women to look at you. No, you should be honking at them. You should be whistling at them. If you're close enough, you should be giving a little smack on the backside. All right. That's humanity, folks. That's how human beings interact with each other. If you think women don't like being catcalled, you're an idiot. Women love being catcalled. Try it sometime. I mean, maybe they like being catcalled by some people more than others. All I know, back in the day, it was very fun driving around with your bros, honking at a group of girls walking down the sidewalk. You'd get nothing but beaming smiles back. They love it, folks. They love it. You know who doesn't love it? The globalists. The people who want to keep you separate. People who want you to be kept in a pod eating bugs and watching, you know, AI-created VR pornography as, you know, the world slips from your fingers. Yeah, here's a guy who's never gonna, he'll never make the mistake. He'll never commit the crime of meeting a real woman in life. It's just crazy. It really is. And from all of the pressure already, the social pressure, the Me Too movement, the corporate pressure, the like life-ending consequences of accidentally saying the wrong thing to the wrong woman and her writing an article accusing you of rape. I mean, it's just already it's such an impossible dating scene. And then now the UK government is putting pretty women on the street and then arresting people who approach them. And then they're advertising it, right? They're making news reports about this and they're telling everybody, yeah, if you see a pretty girl running down the street, don't you dare even look at her. She might be an undercover cop. This is a sting operation. That's crazy. That is crazy. Stop people catcalling and harassing. I mean, the good news is that this program will be shut down immediately as soon as 100% of the catcallers are Muslims. As soon as one of these officers takes one of these jogs through the wrong neighborhood and ends up chained to a radiator underneath a kebab shop, yeah, they're going to shutter this whole operation real fast. Again, just illustrating the absurdity of arresting people for catcalling women when the government sponsors a and participates in, I remind you, of all the reports of, you know, not only the orphanage providing the girls, but the police actually raping the girls themselves. The NHS hospitals helping to cover up the injuries done to the girls. So the government-sponsored rape crisis is not going to be affected by arresting construction workers for trying to squeeze just a modicum of joy out of their miserable lives by whistling at a pretty girl. And, of course, destroying the competence of the girls. I mean, I, you know, we've all read the headlines where it's the same people being like, men need to stop catcalling women. We are not objects for your sexual pleasure. And then the same woman will write an article going, men don't catcall me anymore, and it makes me feel bad. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? And you know, and Alex did a video about this. We played it in one of the first 5-minute segments of yesterday's show. Because you also have the video of the 12-year-old girl with like 9 adult police officers grabbing her and pulling her out of a McDonald's because she's broken curfew to try to eat at a restaurant as an English woman. How dare she? And that video has gone viral. Here's another video. Go to clip number 11 here. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that we talk about is parody level or it's beyond parody. But I'll tell you a little story here from back in the day, probably 10 years ago. I was working as a PA on a set. It was a concert and it was a band from England and they were all talking about, just how ridiculous England is. And they're talking about skateboarding in England and how, you know, difficult it would be or like how they shut it down. And, this is such a stupid story. This is what this story makes me think of. And, you know, basically, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you like really go out of your way to like make a joke that like, if it goes well, it'll be great. But if it goes badly, you're going to look like an idiot. You know, those situations, it's a big risk that you take. Well, I was a young man. And I was hanging out with this very cool band and, for some reason, all of the flight attendants on the plane that flew over with them were all there too. Anyway, they were all joking about or talking about, you know, skateboarding and, you know, one of them said something about skateboarding in London and I piped up, something. He's like, he did an ollie. I'm like, oh, that's illegal. Where's your ollie lesson? Where's your ollie license? And it was one of these things where like I did an accent, I was being real loud, could have gone real bad, but it went over well because the satire was accurate because the people from London were like, damn, that is accurate. Like literally you will have a police officer, oh, ollie in. You try to ollie in, you try to do a trick in England, all four wheels have to be on the ground 90% of the time. It's just absurd. But that's stuck in my mind. It's like, you know, it's another one of these cliches where it's like the one time you made the whole class laugh and it just like fills you with warmth every time you think about it for the next 30 years. It was one of those moments for me. I made this very obnoxious joke, but it went over very well and it landed because it's true, because the parody is true. And because for the last 10 years, this has been the parody of the UK is that like you have to have a license to skateboard And you can skateboard with your skateboarding license, but if you want an ollie, you got to have an ollie license. You got to apply for that and pay the ollie fine, and then you can ollie. But if you do a kickflip, that's going to be another, you know, it's just, it's also bureaucratic and absurd. And it, to me, was a joke, was a an example of exaggeration, hyperbole for the purpose of comedy. And yet, here we are today in the year of our Lord, 2025. And we have clip number six, man given 6 points on his driver license despite not having a driving license. Why? Because he was skateboarding without permission. Let's watch.
I'm fine for no insurance. And the 6 penalty points on the UK driving license that you don't have. And that would obviously, like, if you applied for a UK driving license, you would start with 6 points on that driving license. Okay, so that's that part out of the way.
So if I apply for a UK driver license, this is going to affect, I'm going to have points even before getting the...
You apply for it in the next 3 to 4 years, they will still give you a license.
Yes.
6 in the first 2 years is an automatic ban.
For a skateboard officer, I can't believe it. Mechanical. Really sorry if I did something wrong.
I'd like to go to the next bit, and then we can get you on your way and get you to a meeting. Okay, so as I told you, your vehicle's being seized today, on the road is being used without insurance, it's going to be seized. Okay? We'll go to the car pound. The only way you can get the car pound out of the car pound is if you turn up with a valid policy of motor insurance which allows the vehicle to be used on a road. Okay? Other than that, you cannot pick up the vehicle. The problem you're going to find is that a motor insurance company can't provide you with insurance to carry out to use something on a road that's illegal. These are illegal to be used on a road, so therefore no insurance company is going to cover you.
So I'm just
going
to lose my board?
In effect, yes. But I can't actually say you're losing your board because you may miraculously be able to find a company that insures you, but in effect, yes.
Okay, so we just witnessed a man being fined, getting 6 points on his non-existent driver's license and having his skateboard confiscated for the crime of riding on a skateboard without insurance.
That guy's judge, jury, and executioner, right?
Well, the police says, we're going to impound your board and you're not going to be able to get it unless you provide insurance, but no insurance company provides insurance for skateboards. So how do you ride a skateboard? How do you have insurance to ride a skateboard if no insurance company sells? So skateboarding is illegal in the UK. Skateboarding is illegal in the UK because you're required to have insurance, but nobody sells insurance for skateboards. Therefore, nobody on a skateboard has insurance for it. It's illegal to skateboard in the UK. A million British girls raped by Muslims. Skateboarding is illegal. Catcalling is illegal. Praying outside of an abortion clinic silently in your head is illegal. Referencing the nationality of the rape gang perpetrators is illegal. And it goes on and on and on. And, you know, luckily, because the UK is being so egregious and insane these days, America is actually, like, coming out and saying, yeah, you know, human rights as a concept is under attack in the UK, and this is unacceptable. Now, I think it, with absolutely no sarcasm or, like, humor in this, I genuinely think we should be delivering weapons to Ukraine patriots, the natives in the UK, and Ireland. There's so much better argument for arming the UK citizens than the Ukraine citizens, right? At least the Ukraine citizens, you know, have all this backing behind them. The UK citizens are just under attack from every possible direction. I genuinely think we should be bringing democracy. I think they need to be delivered a little bit of the good old fashioned, you know, world police, America style democracy to the UK. Again, I'm actually not being facetious there. I genuinely think we should be doing that. So I'm going to keep going on some of what's going on in the UK, but tell me again what this clip we're about to go to is, Matt. What am I looking at here? We're talking about catcalling in the UK, but this is not in the UK, is it?
Definitely not.
So So what are we looking at here? Should we intro it or should we just play it?
We're looking at an old school report. Catcalling's been an issue for years. Mm. And I think that if we play clip 12, we'll comment on the other side.
Okay. So this is a video from like 10 years ago, you said. An American news report from about 10 years ago about the topic of catcalling.
Inside edition.
Inside edition on catcalling from about 10 years ago. Let's go to clip number 12 now.
When Ashley Blankenship gets ready for her day, she mentally prepares for what often happens when she heads to work.
Damn.
She has to deal with guys like this.
Wild and crazy guys.
Nah, I'm just kidding. How you doing? Good?
Nice dress.
You look beautiful.
It always makes me feel uncomfortable. Never am I like, oh, wow, that makes me feel good. I love that.
Liar.
No, never.
You
Sean
liar.
Lennon makes no apologies for his behavior
Who?
On the streets.
What was
streets.
His name?
Here we go.
Sean Lennon?
He can't seem to stop.
There she is. Where have you been all my life?
We caught him doing it all around Manhattan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, brother.
He insisted to our Lisa Guerrero that he's harmless and that women don't mind.
If you had a daughter, how would you like it if somebody catcalled out to her on the street?
If I saw them say something out of line, then sure, I'd react with a reaction that a father would. But if, you know.
What if they just said, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess I would feel a little offended or, you know, get upset at that.
Many women we spoke to say they feel offended.
It's mild harassment.
So today, we're going to turn the tables on the catcallers. Ashley won't be hitting the streets alone. I'll be close by, ready to have a little chat with the catcallers.
It doesn't take long for Ashley to get attention. As you might expect, guys give her the once-over as she walks by. Pretty soon, the catcalling
yeah,
starts.
Sorry, they're
Watch
human beings.
Watch what happens when she walks past these construction workers.
Yeah, baby.
And just around the corner, more catcalls.
How you doing, sweetheart?
Do you think women appreciate
doing,
getting complimented
sweetheart?
Like that on the street?
Certain women do. They love attention.
This guy thinks the catcall was our model's fault.
But when Lisa wanted to ask him
she knows she
what
literally
he meant.
Was.
Sir, you just said that a lady was
You're
asking for it.
You're out there on a sting operation. She's absolutely asking
this
for it.
This guy did to tell us he was upset that we were recording the catcalls.
You got a woman walking around looking to get talked to, get somebody to say something. Look what you did. Look what you did.
Let me ask you a question. If that was your daughter, how would you feel about men yelling at her?
Walk around. My daughter wouldn't walk around willing to get yelled at. My daughter walk around conservatively dressed.
All day, the unwanted comments kept coming.
I wouldn't be looking like a whore.
This guy wasn't happy when the cameras were turned on him.
Did he just say a little something to the blonde lady that walked by?
No.
I love you, Blue.
Would it be rude to say something on the street to a young lady, sir?
No.
And if some of you guys watching this think catcalling is a great way to meet women, forget about it.
Have you ever met a guy and gone out with a guy that catcalled out to you on the street?
100% no way.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is our very own clown car, folks. That's Sean Lennon, a.k.a. Clown Car. That is him, isn't it? Clown Car, you got to call in. Clown Car, if you can hear me. I'm putting up the clown signal. The clown signal is going up. It's hitting the clouds. Honk, honk. We're sitting out the honk. Give us a call, Clown Car. Tell us your philosophical interpretation of catcalling and the backlash to it. Again, it can go too far.
I wonder what would happen to like if they asked the men, like, oh, they went on the other side of it. It's like, have you ever gone out with a woman that you've catcalled? They're like,
no.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah. There you go. Like the point of catcalling isn't to go out with the woman, it's to make her feel good. It's to make her feel good about herself. Don't you cheer at basketball games when the ball goes in the hoop? It feels good. You cheer. Again, I mean, they're literally criminalizing human behavior. They're criminalizing human interaction. Is it fun to be catcalled? I don't know. I've never been catcalled. I can't imagine it's that unpleasant. But fine. If you really are, you know, that upset about men looking at you, I can't even take any of it seriously. It's all so stupid. I guess we have to talk about it though. Like I have to talk about it because they're actually arresting people for catcalling attractive women in the UK out for a jog specifically to be catcalled. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. We got some more about the UK that I want to get into. But at the end of the day, it really is all about just an absurd imposition of these completely nonsensical and erratic rules that mean nothing. Again, completely off the mark, completely arbitrary, completely like out of left field in terms of like what they take seriously and what they treat as something that can be covered up and ignored. It's just completely absurd. And everybody's asking this, right? Jeffrey Miller at Primal Poly, why exactly are the British elites trying to ruin British civilization by encouraging mass immigration of people who despise British people and British values? I'm not asking who, I'm asking why. What is the goal? What is the end game? The vision of Britain a century from now, what is it? And it's like, the thing you really have to understand, and it makes everything sort of make more sense. And this is, you have to go to the end of the line and go, I'm just going to accept this as reality. So everything on the front side of this is not a surprise to me. In other words, if you're operating under the delusion that the people in power in America or the UK or anywhere in Europe, that they actually have the best interest of their citizens in mind and are working, you know, for their benefit or towards some sort of positive end for them, it must be just baffling what's going on. It must be baffling. It's not baffling to me. I don't see it as that. I don't see these problems as failures. I see them as attacks because that's what they are. When you understand that the elite of Europe and America despise Europeans and Americans, it's not confusing why they're acting like enemies. They're enemies. Why they're acting like, you know, conquerors as a subject people, because they've conquered a subject people. And when you realize that's the case, everything else makes perfect sense. What's the future vision of the UK 100 years from now? It is a deracialized, bastardized, ethnic soup where nobody has any identity, nobody has any history, nobody has any collective will to do anything ever, where the people are in constant internecine fights between, you know, religious affiliations, so they never get together to attack those in power. If you want to know what the UK 100 years from now looks like, go to Bangladesh or a city in India. And that's the way that it's going. Only you'll have some, you know, remnant admixture of the European gene slowly but surely being eradicated from the population because they hate you and are committing genocide against you.
I've been hearing about this for years, and now it's all the rage. And about a year ago, they did a survey of the customers at theaugustinstore.com and said, what is it you want the most? What product would you like to have? Well, you got that email. And the number one thing was bovine colostrum. This is the highest rated, private labeled, 2,000 milligram per serving. And if you don't know what colostrum is, let me tell you. A cow's a mammal, we're a mammal. A dog's a mammal, a blue whale's a mammal. I know most of you know that. And mammals drink milk from their mother's breasts. The first milk of the first few weeks is called colostrum. And it's more clear, and it's full of all of the immunity and all the super nutrients, and it's basically God's vaccine. We've got the best bovine colostrum that we're introducing right now that you're going to find anywhere. Cellular recovery and defense matrix. It's also incredible for gut health and flora. Immune support, natural compounds strengthen your body's defenses against toxins and stress. Muscle recovery aid promotes faster tissue repair and reduces soreness post-workout or strain. Stress and energy balance delivers calm, focused energy with natural adaptogens, no caffeine crashes. Toxin defense supports detox pathways to flush out environmental pollutants and free radicals. Enhance nutrient absorption, improves nutrient uptake for better overall health without fillers. It's a hassle. I mean, because you only get this for a few weeks after the cow has a baby. It's the next best thing to mommy's milk. So it's all the rage for years. Everybody's going totally insane about it. I'm going to be taking it. This is next level. And I'll be completely honest with you. Everybody's been telling me to take colostrum for years. It's hard for me to start taking a supplement. Once I do and it works, I stay on it. I'm going to be taking this. All I hear about is how great it is.
All right, welcome back, folks. Hey, I got great news for you, folks. We have more evidence of the crimes of the deep state. I know what you were thinking. You're thinking, we have the idea that all of these people are doing bad things, but if only we had some evidence. If only we had, I don't know, text messages or, you know, the evidence of where the dossier came from that first inspired the FISA court warrants. If only we had all of that evidence and a little bit more. Maybe we need a little bit more evidence. Maybe 10 years of just an overwhelming amount of evidence. It's not enough. So the good news is we have more evidence, folks. More evidence of more crimes committed by the same people about the same topics over and over again. We've got more evidence, folks. Aren't you so excited? Let's go to clip number 6. This is Solomon describing the bombshell revelation about, did you know James Comey was leaking information to the press? What? Oh, my goodness. This is the first time hearing about this. Let's watch.
Here. Yeah. It is a worthwhile read. I'll let you sum it up, and then I want your conclusion on what you're finding here, because to me it's very damning.
Well, what you find out is that James Comey decided not to work through the FBI press office when he wanted to change the narrative in Washington, burnish his reputation against attacks from Democrats and try to sully Donald Trump's reputation. If you remember, Democrats were mad that James Comey let out of the bag just before the election that there might be some new evidence in the Hillary Clinton email scandal. Hillary blamed Comey for throwing the election. She blamed the Russians for throwing elections. She blamed everybody but herself for throwing the election for her. But Comey was trying to rehabilitate that. And so he had an intermediary, a Columbia Law professor by the name of Daniel Richmond, who the FBI confirmed and interviewed. And Richmond said, yes, I used my relationship with a New York Times reporter named Michael Schmidt. He's one of the authors of the Pulitzer Prize winning package that President Trump is now suing over. And my goal was to improve negative stories about James Comey and to set a narrative, i.e., set the Russia collusion narrative. This guy worked around the official channels of the FBI press office. And at one point, the FBI noted, you met with James Comey. He gave you access to classified information. A short while later, you had a conversation with that New York Times reporter, and he ends up reporting something that appears to be classified. Did you do it? And he gives, I think, perhaps the most famous denial people will remember since Bill Clinton says it depends what the meaning of the word is when he tried to obfuscate whether he had an affair with Monica Lewinsky. He says, I can say, I don't think I confirmed the information. I can say with a discount that I didn't give him the classified information. With a discount means you got to give me some room. It's an extraordinary moment. The FBI clearly had strong suspicions that this was a potential backdoor for information, maybe classified information, to get out to the media with James Comey's fingerprints on it. And they didn't go much further. They didn't put Comey before the grand jury, that we can tell. They didn't appear to put this gentleman, Daniel Richmond, before the grand jury. And like Adam Schiff, as we told you last night, here they have an eyewitness whistleblower who said, I was in the room when he authorized leaks of intel. These end up being a dead end again. And it's another reminder of a dual system of justice that the Justice Department had the last 6 years. These are documents that were never given to Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan confirmed that to me today. And we're just learning 8 years later, because of what Kash Patel turned over, that the FBI had all the evidence of how the false narrative of Russia collusion was spread across this country to the detriment of voters, to the detriment of President Trump's first campaign, and they did nothing about it.
It's a credit to the FBI. It's a credit to Kash Patel. It's a credit to the people that are involved in sharing this information now with the public. Do you see legal jeopardy here?
I think if Pam Bondi goes the grand jury route, that these are people that are going to be hauled before the grand jury. I want to remind people, most classified information statutes have a 5-year statute of limitations, but there is a provision that extends it to 10 years if it's willing and knowing. And there is some pretty clear evidence of a strong apparatus put in place to make these leaks occur, according to the FBI documents. I think a grand jury could go back and try to compel testimony and find out if it rises to the level of criminality. Tomorrow, though, I think we're going to take people on a new destination, which is, how often Did the FBI get blocked in trying to investigate Hillary Clinton corruption at the Clinton Foundation? You're going to be shocked by the answer.
So, again, I still didn't even get there. Like, the FBI knew. No, the FBI was doing it. What do you mean the FBI knew? They did it. They were the ones doing it.
You just saw an ad for methylene blue. Tell people the short-term effect and then now the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some methylene blue about a half hour before. Gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Yeah, something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theAllStarStore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know.
I like it better than doing like a five-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
If you'll just try, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. Now's the time. Get the methylene blue, bare minimum, thealexostore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. We again just have so much to talk about, so many videos to get into, but I want to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the UK, because it's a symbol, it's something to look for as what the future of America will be if we don't get a handle on things. That is, we don't wrest control back from the elite that are doing all of this on purpose. Would actually be extremely easy to do. And we see the way that Trump is seeming to try to get a handle at least on the crime situation. We'll return, of course, to the, I mean, it's like this stuff. I guess I should get into this. Maybe people don't know about it. Maybe they haven't heard about this stuff. Gateway Pundit, declassified memos reveal Comey's secret media mole leaked classified information to the New York Times to push for special counsel to investigate Trump and Russia hoax. And you got John Solomon going, the FBI knew about this. You mean the FBI was the one doing this? I mean, what are we talking about here? It's like saying the Unabomber knew about the packages being sent. Well, he was the one sending them. The FBI was the one doing that. I don't get how it's being phrased. And again, it's being treated like it's news. We've known this forever. So, you know, hopefully something comes of this. Like, I really have a hard time continuing to report on more evidence for the same crimes that we've been reporting on for literally 10 years at this point. The same people that we know have been involved since the beginning. I mean, is it news that Comey was leaking? This is an established fact. From the last time he was placed under oath and questioned by Congress, which was, I think, during the Trump administration, the first Trump administration. Where he's like, well, I didn't leak anything. I simply provided information to a friend of mine who happened to be a journalist. It's like, so what this actually says, you know, here's the story from Mario Knopfel on X. Declassified, Comey ordered FBI to help write New York Times hit piece. The newly declassified FBI documents reveal investigators discovered the FBI Office of Public Affairs, quote, was told to assist the New York Times with the April 2017 article. The document states FBI employees, including Comey, either directed or otherwise authorized U.S. official assistance to the New York Times. The FBI did not coordinate or brief DOJ leadership or DOJ OPA about this assistance. As part of the FBI's assistants, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, were interviewed by the New York Times in the presence of DOJ OPA officials, even though AG Lynch had left the department and DOJ regulations called for DOJ OPA coordination in cases of media contact with the New York Times. The document confirms what many suspect about FBI media coordination during the Trump-Russia investigation era. So you have the actual document here. Investigators learned that the FBI Office of Public Affairs, OPA, was told to assist the New York Times with the April 2017 article. According to interviews with FBI employees, Comey either directed or otherwise authorized FBI's official assistance to the New York Times. FBI OPA did not coordinate or brief DOJ leadership or DOJ OPA about this. As part of the FBI's assistance, FBI officials Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were interviewed by the New York Times concerning this article. And, of course, they were allowed to plant information in this. So, I don't know. I mean, yes, well, wonderful. It's wonderful to see the same crime having more evidence put forward. Are you telling me Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were acting outside of the confines of their official duties? What? I can't believe it. Oh my gosh. You're telling me Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, who were caught texting each other in black and white, basically a full confession. It's our insurance policy. We're going to stop Trump from getting elected through this Russia investigation. I mean, when were those text messages released? 1942? Like, we've had them forever. I'm pretty sure we've had these text messages since 2017 or so, right? Something like that.
Well, I think that, like, the Justice Department and the FBI and everybody who would prosecute it, probably just waiting for the statute of limitations to run out. That's probably it.
That makes sense. So they shouldn't be allowed to do that, right? I mean, that's not what the statute of limitations is for. That's not what it's about. That should not be an option for the Justice Department. So the Justice Department commits crimes and then refuses to prosecute those crimes that they committed. Yeah, obviously. So I don't know. Maybe we need something above the DOJ. I don't know. Some sort of Praetorian Guard, some sort of imperial court that can rain judgment down upon the DOJ. All right, should we get into the UK or? I mean, I just have so many dang headlines and videos. Let's go to clip 15, because this is Matt Baker. He's talking about San Diego, but it's just a small slice of life, local interest story that, of course, is simply indicative of the wider trend of civilizational collapse because we're being ruled by incompetent morons. In fact, we'll go to this clip of Matt Baker, then I'm going to get another clip of the D.C. police chief literally not knowing what the phrase chain of command means. Somebody posted that with a quote. I don't know if it's Aristotle or Plato or something. But it's, you know, basically the worst curse you can be under is to be governed by people stupider than you. And we're being governed mostly by people with average or below average intelligence that are also just hostile foreigners, admittedly, by their own words. But it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell sometimes what is malice and what is stupidity. At a certain point, it doesn't really matter. Right? Some I'm going through with my kids right now. You know, sometimes, you know, my son hurts my daughter by throwing something at her head on purpose. It's like, that's bad. Sometimes he's just not paying attention and spinning around and throwing toys at random, and a toy hits his sister in the head. And I'm trying to explain to him, it doesn't matter if you, and he's like, but I didn't mean to. It's like, it doesn't matter. You hit her in the head with the thing. So you got to go apologize. Okay. So, you know, it doesn't matter if it's on purpose and malice or incompetence and an accident. The outcome is exactly the same. So it should be treated exactly the same. And whatever punishment or reward should be exactly the same. So here we have Matt Baker reporting on San Diego local government. Just insane amounts of waste, insane amounts of manipulation and deception committed against their own people, robbing their own people blind for no discernible reason. You tell me, stupidity or malice? Personally, I don't care. Go to Matt Baker.
Matt Baker, Kearney Mesa, Montgomery Field at the trash can apocalypse. Now, whether you know it or not, San Diego, we had free trash pickup for over 100 years. It was something that the city prided itself on. But now, in a previous year, they had put a deceptive measure tricking the public into paying for the trash now. But not only are they going to do that, they're going to trash all of these perfectly good trash cans and melt them down, supposedly, and recycle them in an effort to save money and line their pockets. And not only are they going to be destroying the old trash cans, they're going to be making the individual homeowners purchase brand new trash cans on a three-tiered system. So they're going to have a tiny trash can, a medium trash can, and a huge trash can, which is actually the same trash can you were already getting. But don't worry, they're also going to add a nice little RFID chip to each trash can just so they can keep track of each trash can. Isn't that nice? Just to put it in perspective, there's going to be 400,000 of these motherfuckers that the city is going to be trashing and burning and melting down so that they can save the environment and line their pockets with more money for their bullshit projects. Just so you know, it's really important to get this out because we actually did have a small reprieve and there was a lawsuit filed and for an injunction to stop the payments going out for these new trash cans. However, even if we do succeed, we'll still have to pay $165 million for the total of 400,000 trash cans, which are already contracted to be built at a total of, how much was it, Luke?
$162.50
each. $162.50
each
trash can.
Again, just absolutely insane. Homeowner challenging San Diego trash drop fee request for quick trial. Seek injunction instead. The plaintiffs had previously asked for an expedited September trial. The stipulation presented Tuesday replaces that request. Again, I mean, are they just stupid? Are they just incompetent? How do you waste $165 million on trash cans and change the rules and take something that was provided for free and then start charging for it and then not even provide it in the first place? It's just, what are we doing? What are we doing here, folks? We're watching America slip through our fingers out of the sheer incompetence. And again, to me, it always just goes back to the incompetence of the voters themselves. That, like, how do you keep voting for these people? Why do you keep these people in charge? Why do you keep voting for these people, man? It is not good. It's really, really not good. People like this. Clip number 14 here. This is Cincinnati, and this goes back to the attack from, what was it, last week? 2 weeks ago? You know, the jazz festival. There's a Cincinnati jazz festival. There were people on the streets, and a group of black guys teamed up and started beating the crap out of white guys and then slammed the white woman's head into the pavement. And then nobody called the cops. People basically mostly just filmed it. And only because of the viral video that lit a fire under some of the Cincinnati officials to actually arrest these people. Because, hey, if you're a city, you're going to want to have people going out and spending money, or your city's going to collapse. And if people instead are beaten half to death for trying to walk around in their own neighborhood, then you're going to collapse as a city. So, like, literally out of survival, they were just, like, forced to do something to arrest these guys. And yet, at the same time, they came out blaming the victims, blaming racism, saying actually they said the N-word, as if that's an excuse at all. And now they've gone, like, completely off the deep end. And a lot of this stuff broke yesterday evening. And it was just like a litany of things. It was like one thing after another. And this one might have been the most egregious. But I'll show you some other stories that sort of correlate with this and correspond with this. Let's go to clip number 14 here. These are black community leaders talking about this vicious and unprovoked attack against white people because they're white by a bunch of black people who almost killed them. The sixth one was just arrested yesterday, I believe. But here's what the black leadership in Cincinnati thinks is the real issue here. Let's watch.
Six individuals were charged with aggravated assault, which is a felony. The white guy incited or urged six other people to commit a felony.
The method by which this situation has been handled raises serious questions as to whether there's bias involved in the investigation. It also brings into question the possibility of a lack of integrity and whether there's something else to hide.
I mean, you want to talk about victim blaming. I mean, they literally just said that the victim of the beating is at fault because he incited six felonies. So he should be charged for being beaten up because he incited six felonies. So he said words. He was then attacked for those words. And they're saying he should be charged for the words that he said because apparently black people are not human beings with consciousness who can decide what to do. They don't have free will. They're like animals, right? And so if they hear a word or if you disrespect them or if you step on their shoe, it's not that they have a choice to make where they can determine, is this something worth going to jail for? Is this really worth, you know, killing a person over? Or are these words, and I'm a human being and I can handle it, and sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me. I can choose whether or not to commit violence or not to commit violence. They don't have that option, according to the black leadership in Cincinnati. I'm not the one saying this. I think it's the black people that should be arrested and charged for beating a man up. The only possible reason that wouldn't be the case is if those people are literally incapable of controlling themselves, like incapable, like, yeah. Are they not able to control that? Now, I can only imagine that the claim is that the guy said the N-word. Because apparently that's all it takes. Because apparently that word, overrides the consciousness of black people and they just descend into a feral state and they can't be held accountable for that. I mean, obviously that's not the argument she's making, but that is the conclusion you'd have to come to. That's the conclusion you would have to come to. This guy incited violence against him. Now, I think the way that would make sense is if, like, you know, it's some YouTube prank channel where they really are just deliberately going out to try to get people to attack them. And it's like, okay, you wanted to be attacked. You're filming it. You know, you can't be doing that. But if somebody says something that somebody else doesn't like, and the second person beats up the first person for saying the thing, you cannot then say the person saying stuff is at fault because he incited the other person. Because the other person is a human being. That's an adult that is responsible for their own actions, even if they hear words they don't like. Because they're not babies. They're black people. They're not children. Yeah, they begged for that beatdown. Dim Cincinnati city councilwoman claims white couple beaten by black mob deserved it. They deserved it. They were asking for it, for being white and not showing the proper deference to their black betters, so they were lynched in the street. I mean, sure, you know, Jaquan sucker punched the guy in the back of the head and slammed his head into the concrete and stood up and started stomping on his face while another person came up and drove her heel into his stomach. And sure, you know, the guy had to spend a while in the hospital. We don't even have, you know, confirmation of anything he may have said or not said. All we know is the outcome of the brutal and vicious assault. But are you really going to charge Jaquan with assault just because he brutally assaulted somebody? He's a black person and he heard a word he doesn't like. So really, it's the person who said the word. It's their fault. I mean, that's the argument they're, unless I'm crazy, is that not the argument they're making? They're blaming the victims for inciting an assault against them. So what should they have done is the question. How did this whole conflict get started? Was there a back and forth of words exchanged? Or were the black people just totally silent, totally peaceful? This white guy comes up and is just like, what's up? In words. And they're all just like, chimp mode activated. And they all just like go insane. And then they wake up from a fog like, what? Where am I? Why am I covered in blood? What happened? I was just sitting peacefully. I was enjoying an ice cream sandwich on the park bench when everything blacked out and I woke up and there's a guy on the ground. What's happening here? Like, that's how they want you to think this went down. It's just, it's egregious. It's insane. And they're actually treating black people like they can't control themselves, don't have free will, and can't choose whether or not to attack somebody. They have no choice. They're forced to do it by the words the guy spoke. Is maybe the guy's a magician? Have we considered maybe he's a hypnotist? No, we don't know. We don't know how the conflict started. Maybe he did mind control the black people to attack himself. It's possible, okay? It'd have to be for him to be at fault for being beaten by a mob. So, I don't even want to call this a lynching because most lynchings actually had a crime underneath it. But for all intents and purposes, it was a lynching. And now you have the, you know, politicians basically going, hey, this was street justice. And maybe the guy who was beaten up, he should be charged. I think he should be charged as well. Because how dare he say something that got him beat up? I mean, again, I guess I could just like mention this story and move on, but like, I feel like we don't give enough attention to stuff like this. It just pops up and people go, wow, that's ridiculous. Anyway, did you see what happened over here? Like, guys, we've got mobs of black people beating up white people because of their race. And then the black politicians coming out and saying that white guy should have known his place and it's his fault. And now these poor, innocent black men are being charged with felonies because of this white guy's incitement of them. I mean, you want to talk about idiocracy. You want to talk about just pure inversion of everything. Here we are. Here we are, folks. So not to belabor it, not to beat a dead horse, but like, is anybody else covering this? Is that clip being played on Fox News over and over again? Or they just make these statements and everybody sort of rolls their eyes and moves on. Don't roll your eyes at this. This, like, do you think it's insane? Have you seen what's going on in the UK? Have you seen what's going on in Germany? This is what happens. A 15-year-old girl gets gang raped by Muslims. And she says, you know, she calls them scumbags. And she gets arrested and gets more jail time than the guys who raped her. So, like, don't roll your eyes at this. This isn't funny. This isn't silly. This is a projection of what is to come. You will be charged for being a victim.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, know me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up a pump.
Well, you can always get it at theologyshow.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
It's throughout. I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle. And so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, theoxygenshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psycho. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. By the way, yesterday I covered the very curious video. The very curious video of several Hasidic Jewish gentlemen having a little barbecue in the woods after mutilating the corpse of a deer and burning it on a pallet and then walking away like it wasn't weird they were doing that. It was very funny. So I uploaded a video of us talking about it and speculating about it. But apparently it's been censored on X. Sensitive content. Now there's nothing, you know, graphic or sensitive about it. I guess you could vaguely see like the, I mean,
basically like a, like roadkill. You can see roadkill, basically, the equivalent of it. But I don't, I have the feeling that that wasn't what caused it to be tagged. But I had people responding saying, why is this labeled sensitive content? Why is this labeled graphic content for me? Basically showing that, that you couldn't see it unless you, you know, actually clicked on it and went to it. It wouldn't show up in people's feeds. And so I retweeted that saying, is anybody else getting sensitive content labels on this? Cause you know, when you upload a video, it gives you the option to label it yourself, sensitive content, which you should do if it's, you know, something gory or pornographic, because nobody wants that showing up on their feed all of a sudden. And some people were saying, yes, it says graphic content. Some people were saying it's showing up fine for me. Other people were saying it just says tweet not available. So apparently, and you know, who knows what setting was what, but at least for some people, or maybe in some jurisdictions, you know, maybe people in the UK couldn't see it or something because of the Online Safety Act. I don't really know. It's all speculation at this point. But what I do know is that my very innocuous and, you know, well-meaning investigation into this video is being completely shadow banned and crushed and tamped down on. I didn't even upload the videos. Chris Paul, who's been doing a great job clipping the shows. I suggest you go and follow him at InfoWars 1984. At InfoWars 1984. He's been working very hard posting these clips, so please go give him a follow and a share. InfoWars 1984 is the handle there on X. And I encourage you to do it too. I mean, honestly, that is such a fantastic and powerful way to help us out. It's absolutely free. And if you're watching the show already, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you just have your screen recorder on or just back up? If you see something you like, it's like, wow, that's what I always say. I say this all the time. Here's Harrison saying it. I'm going to clip it out and put it up on my social. Tag me, tag other people. I mean, you know, there's a way to deal with X. I think a lot of people get frustrated because they just put stuff up and, but they don't have any followers and they don't tag anybody. And so nobody sees it. You got to play the game a little bit. You got to tag the right people. If you're just starting off on X, comments are where it's at. And especially if you can be first in, you know, first under the gate, you know, follow people that are big and have, you know, a lot of response. And when they tweet something out, have a tweet ready, fired up, be the first in the comments. And people will like you. They'll click your profile. They'll see what else you have to say. There's a game to play. There's a way to play it to increase views. You're not going to start off getting a million views on a video. It would have to be something. It'd have to be a crazy video for that to be the case. So stick at it. You know, keep plugging away. Keep, you know, trying to reach out to people and do some research. If it's something you seriously want to do, you can actually make money with this. And if you get a million views, I think it's a million views a month, and you're whatever it is, confirmed on X, we have the blue check mark. If you pay for whatever the level of premium subscription on X, you can get paid out for that. I think it's a million views a month, and you're then eligible for revenue share. And like some people make thousands of dollars a month just from uploading videos they don't even make. That could be you. You could be doing that. So big shout out to at InfoWars 1984. There's a couple other guys that are doing the same. I always try to retweet them. Basically any clip I see from this show, I try to retweet. And, I'll be better at it. I should be encouraging people to follow, these accounts on my X. But I'm telling you now, go follow these accounts. Go to my X, see the videos I repost, click the links on their names and give them a follow. Show them some support. Again, that's the absolute free way that you can engage in a very powerful and effective way in this information war. If, of course, you want to contribute to our efforts and help keep us on air and help keep us in the fight in producing this content, please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. You got a million reasons to do it. Not only are you helping us stay on air, you're helping us, you know, win this fight against the globalists, both in the political sphere as well as, you know, in the courtroom, in our individual battle. But also the products themselves are absolutely fantastic, absolutely the best in the business, and you will appreciate them and come back for more. It would be very stupid of us to sell products that were not effective because we literally rely on return customers. How stupid would we be to sell people bunk, just guaranteeing that you know, they are a customer one time and one time only. No, we want repeat customers. We want people coming back over and over. We want people taking these products and changing their lives and, you know, coming back over and over again. So, of course, the products are the best. Colostrum is our new product, our newest product on theAlexJonesStore.com. Bovine Colostrum Plus Cellular Recovery and Defense Matrix. It's up to 50% off right now as an introductory price. I believe it's even higher with the VIP, if you're a VIP member there. You can save 50%, and you can save more if you, you know, schedule it for regular delivery. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go there today. Get your Colostrum Plus. See what it can do for you. And we always get testimonials about our products. But yesterday was actually Matt, our producer, giving his own testimonial about how it's helped clear up skin conditions for him. It's another one of these things that you might even not know what it can do for you. Right, some of this stuff, you might just think, well, I just have this condition. I am this way, you know. I've always had an achy shoulder, whatever it is. I'm not a doctor. I'm not telling you this is what it's going to do. Just as an example, it's type of thing where you just think, this is the way it is. This is how my body is. This is how the world is, whatever it is. And then you start taking supplements. You're like, wait, I didn't have to live with that? I didn't have to just endure that pain or, you know, suffer that condition? It was actually just a shortage of a particular mineral or supplement or vitamin that I didn't even know I was short on. There's a lot of products like that. Colostrum is one of them. See what it can do for you. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. And make sure you're a VIP member to get the maximum amount. I want to go now to a video. I mentioned this yesterday. I didn't get nearly as into it as I should have, but I'm glad that this TikToker, you know, covered it even better, or covered it fully. Basically, Canada, we showed the video of Canada is issuing $20,000 fines for walking in the woods. Okay, now they're predicating this on climate change. They're also saying it's for your safety. They're coming up with lots of reasons. It's about wildfires, all sorts of stuff that they're saying, none of which is actually legitimate because we have some other goings on. I'm sorry I'm being vague here, but the video will lay it all out for you. But in fact, I'm going to drop a different video in here. We'll go to this video first because this is a Canadian spokeswoman explaining this insane law that is charging people, fining people $20,000 for merely walking outside. And I thought this was a joke when I first saw it. It was a guy filming his son just like walking through a field. And he's like, what I'm doing right now is illegal and I could be fined $20,000 for this. It's like, what? Wait, that's okay. Sure, dude. Sure. Yeah, right. You're being charged $20,000 for walking in the woods. Come on, that can't be true, is it? But no, it's absolutely true. And then we showed the video, I think yesterday or the day before, of the guy actually being fined $20,000. Now, in that case, he like wanted to be, he was like, no, you should fine me. He was like, fine me because I disagree with this law and I want to challenge this law. I can't challenge the law if I don't have standing, and I don't have standing if I haven't been fined. So you need to fine me so then I have standing to go challenge this law behind the fine in the first place. But it is a law. It's on the books and it's being enforced in Canada. But there's some other aspects to it that are making people think that this probably has nothing to do with climate change. Probably has nothing to do with wildfires. Probably has nothing to do with safety in your health. And a lot more to do with resource extraction and population control. So let's go to clip 22 here. This is the, Canadian official. Basically, you know, the Canadians are outraged that they're being charged $20,000 and they're like, this is stupid. What does this have to do with wildfires? What does this have to do with anything? And so the Canadian government is just coming up with different reasons that they could be implementing this, right? Which makes you, you know, which should make you aware that the reason they're giving for doing this is not the legitimate one. Because they're like, oh, we're going to charge you $20,000 for walking in the woods because Because hiking, because people hiking causes wildfires. We're trying to fight wildfires. People are going, that doesn't make any sense. That's stupid. You shouldn't do that. And they're like, well, then it's about you breaking your leg. And what if you break your leg? And we can't have you breaking your leg in the woods. Like, okay, so it never was about the wildfires. So why'd you say that in the first place? The point of all of it is, if they're lying, it's for a reason. And the reason is the cover up of the actual purpose of the fine. And I'll get to the speculation in just a second. First clip 22 here is the Canadian, government just A-B testing excuses for the law they've already implemented. Let's watch.
Me going for a walk in the woods is going to cause a fire. I can understand why people think that that's ridiculous. But the reality is it's not that you might cause a fire. It's that if you're out there walking in the woods and you break your leg, we're not going to come and get you because we have emergency responders that are out focused on a fire that is threatening the lives of New Brunswickers. And if you take your boat out fishing in a pond in Crown Land and you capsize, we're not going to be able to come and help you out because our first responders are focused on an immediate and serious threat to our province. And so it's the possibility of diverting emergency resources away from where they are really needed.
So like that makes sense on its own. That makes sense on its own. You know, outside of any fines or anything, what she just said, perfectly sensible, right? Sensible, whatever. Canadian man fined $28,872 for walking in woods during wildfire ban. So it makes sense to me that it's like, fair warning, everybody. You know, if that's the way this was put, is like, fair warning, our emergency services are at maximum capacity right now. We do not have the manpower to rescue you. Fair warning, be safe out there. Then great, that makes perfect sense to me. I get that. You're fighting a big wildfire. You're potentially saving tens of thousands of lives. You can't be drawing resources away from that to go rescue some idiot that decided to capsize his boat in a lake somewhere. That makes sense, and that's as far as it should go. It should be a warning that you should say, hey, guys, you want to go out in the woods? You're on your own. Do not expect the Canadian government to come rescue you. And then fine. And then if people go out and they break their leg, then they die in the woods, and that was the choice they made. They're free human beings, and they made a bad decision, I guess. But as long as they're aware of the risk and chose to take it, that's on them as far as I'm concerned. You know that there's no emergency services available, and you go out on a lake, and you capsize, and you drown. What are we supposed to do about that? That was a choice you made, and you have to suffer the consequences. How does it possibly justify $30,000 fines? That's the disconnect. How could it possibly justify 30, like, life-crushing fines for walking in the woods? Okay, so what is this really about? I think we have an answer, and I'm glad this woman put it together for me. Clip number 5. Let's watch.
Let me get this straight. 3 provinces in Canada have banned people from going into the forest because of fire danger. And if you don't comply, you could face up to $150,000 in fines and jail time.
So effective today, new fines will range from $50,000 to $150,000. And imprisonment in default of payment will increase from 3 days to up to 6 months.
A government that can bankrupt you and send you to jail for going into the forest? That doesn't sound like a government that is built to serve you. That sounds like a government that thinks they own you. So when a forest lockdown happens near you, ask yourself, is this for your safety and the climate? Or does it have something to do with lithium mining? You know, the mineral that is used in electric car batteries? That, when it catches fire, takes thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons of water to put out. And let's not forget governments granting corporations the right to mine on public and private lands for the greater good. And they can still mine during the fire restrictions. But what do I know? I'm just a conspiracy theorist.
So very, very, very suspicious that you have these gigantic mining contracts opened and suddenly Canada makes it illegal to walk in the woods. Are they connected? It seems like they are because they're directly correlated to one another. But what do I know? I'm a conspiracy theorist too. We got some more videos to go to. I just dropped in the one I was talking about earlier with the DC police. But I think what I want to do now, let's go to clip number two here. This is a great video about, again, another sort of excuse, using climate change, using the environment as an excuse to impose on your restrictions, limit your liberty, and slowly but surely boil the water, turn you into a slave before you've noticed. Let's go to clip number two. Now it's happening in Massachusetts. Let's watch.
Massachusetts is quietly pushing a bill that could fundamentally change how Americans are allowed to use their vehicles. Yes, you are hearing that clearly. Senate Bill S-2246, introduced by Senate Majority Leader Cynthia Cream, sets the stage for a future where the government tracks and potentially limits how many miles you can drive each year. This isn't a fringe proposal. It's working its way through the legislature right now, and similar ideas are being tested in other states across the country. This is not a federal law. This is a state law. And at its core, this is not about transportation or emissions. It's about power and control. So what is actually in this bill? The Massachusetts legislation proposes the creation of a new government entity. This is state-based, not federal, that would track every vehicle mile traveled. They're calling it VMT. And to implement these policies to reduce them over time. In other words, less mileage allowed. Now, while the bill doesn't yet impose mileage caps, it does instruct state agencies to create a reasonable pathway to cut how much people drive annually. Translation, a government-mandated limit on personal travel is no longer hypothetical. It's being drafted right now. Now, Bill 2246 in the Senate also outlines coordination with automakers and the use of vehicle inspection data to monitor individual mileage. It even suggests changing to urban planning, encouraging the development of walkable neighborhoods and fewer parking options, all with the goal of getting you out of your car, whether you want to or not.
So again, just completely outrageous and obvious what they're trying to do. I mean, this is not about emissions. The number of reasons that that's a ridiculous claim is infinite, but obviously this is part and parcel with the C40 City program and the desired, you know, plan of the powers that be to limit your consumption in every possible way. Monitoring and limiting the number of miles that you drive, the number of flights that you take, the amount of meat that you eat, the amount you use your air conditioning. Of course, all of this is ridiculous on the face of it because it's all predicated on the idea that gasoline cars create, you know, extra greenhouse gases. They ignore the fact that electric cars at this point today in America are coal powered, since the electricity they draw on to charge their batteries come from coal powered power plants for the most part. And of course, that doesn't even get into the excessive pollution that's created in the manufacture of these cars. For example, the lithium strip mining that is likely now taking place in the fire ravaged sections of Canada. So, I mean, again, just like all of this, the excuses that they're giving are not adequate to explain the laws that are being imposed. So the actual reason behind them is up for question, if you don't know already. But I'll tell you right now, it's about basic control. It's about control. That's all it's ever been about. It's all it's ever been about. Never been more obvious. The cliche at this point of the, you know, globe-trotting environmentalists like John Kerry or Bill Gates with their fleet of private jets telling you, you know, 20 miles is enough this month for you driving. I mean, it's cliche because it's so egregious and in your face and obvious how hypocritical and deceptive these scumbags are. And how if they believed a single word of what they said, their own behavior would be massively different. Instead, they give themselves outs. They give themselves caveats. In fact, it's exactly their environmental work that puts them above such restrictions, because without them, who would be doing this important work of restricting your flight time or drive time? Is Massachusetts planning to track how much you drive? A new bill sparks debate. Now remember, this is perfectly in line with things that are happening like in the UK, where they're saying every car needs to be needs to have a black box installed that can be monitored in real time 24/7 by the government. Okay, that has to do with free speech, because they just want cameras and microphones everywhere to constantly be monitoring everything you say in order to form your social credit score and determine how much carbon allotment you're provided based on your spiritual worth, according to, you know, their matrix of value. There's a mandate in Massachusetts to drastically reduce emissions. A new transportation bill to get the state there has lit up social media. A new transportation bill to get the state there has lit up... My God. I mean, this one, is everybody retarded? What is this sentence? Am I crazy? Am I having a stroke? A new transportation bill to get the state there has lit up social media. And it, which with claims that lawmakers on Beacon Hill want to limit your driving. Does that sentence make sense to you guys? Okay. There's a mandate. There's a mandate in Massachusetts to drastically reduce emissions. A new transportation bill to get the state there has lit up social media. Okay. To get to the point that they're drastically reducing emissions. I don't know. I don't know, man. Maybe we just need to have AI write this stuff. As written, the bill aims to align the state's transportation plans with mandates and goals for the reducing emissions and vehicle miles traveled. It's the latest part of what some opponents concerned that the Commonwealth might track how much you drive. Back in 2021, the state passed a law that requires Massachusetts to reach zero emissions by 2050. Quote, this is not a goal. It's not wishful thinking. It's actually a law. It's actually a law. It's not wishful thinking. I mean, it is impossible to achieve. That's not going to stop them from trying. They have different metrics the state needs to meet or have to comply with. Craney is one of the loudest critics of the bill currently being discussed. Ultimately, what this is about is control and limiting transportation. And if you do need to transport yourself doing public transportation, specifically vehicles, cars, and trucks, what they're trying to do is put mechanisms in place to limit mobility. And of course, that's exactly what it's about. And we know the ultimate goal is to have you not own a car at all. I've said a million times, car ownership is being deliberately crushed. And eventually, everybody will have to have electric cars, but we don't have the material or the grid capacity to support every car being electric. So therefore, there won't be that many cars. You'll have about, you know, a quarter of as many cars as you have on the road now, maybe like a tenth as many cars as you have on the road now. Just nobody will own them, and there'll be autonomous driving fleets probably with some sort of, you know, ownership, stakeholder share where you can invest in a car and then you get, you know, return on investment as it's used as an Uber. You know, it'll be a whole marketplace, but the ultimate result will be that you can't get anywhere without permission from the state. And that's the ultimate goal. For obvious reasons, right? It's not complicated. Doesn't take a lot of speculation, especially since they can't tell you what they're doing in the first place. Go read the C40 cities promotions. They adopt these ridiculous laws, then they impose them. They do absolutely nothing to help the environment whatsoever. They do restrict your freedoms pretty severely. We'll be back on the other side with Brandon Weicker to talk about the Ukraine war and the peace summit happening in Alaska. Always has been.
We need funds. We're fighting the globalists at Point Blank Range. And they got a receivership hearing with Judge Gloria Gamble that ran the Texas show trial next week to send the sheriffs here. I get it could be within days next Wednesday to shut us down. And I'm sure we'll get lots of funds then once we're shut down. Be like, oh God, he really did need help. Oh yeah. We have been battling and battling and barely surviving. They turned the internet off here before. They had a fake sale to Bloomberg's front group. Remember all that? And it was because we didn't give up and the crew didn't give up. When I told the crew, no, we're going to beat this, don't go, and I stayed here and slept here a couple times, that we're still here. And because you bought the products, we had enough money for lawyers to go battle it and beat it. Everybody listening needs to get off the fence, get off the bench, get up at the plate, and needs to go become a VIP. $30 a month. See it as a donation. You get $40 each month to spend the store. Sales on top of everything. Special deals. Special offers just to you. It's insane. And then if you really just want to support and you don't want methylene blue or turmeric, you're crazy if you don't, or Ultimate Life Force, the best cardiovascular spike protein detox, everybody should be taking it. And it's the best. Ultimate Life Force is the best cardiovascular, heart health, spike protein detoxer. Every man, woman, and child should take at least one regimen of it, see how you feel. It does dramatic things. We have the strongest turmeric. You should get it. And I got a lot of news to cover. I won't sit here and beat a dead horse, but
The news we get out is so powerful, and it's that less than 1% of people that buy stuff at theauctionstore.com that make all this possible. And this fight is your fight. They want us off the air because they want to shut down focal points of organizations that hold the Trump administration's feet to the fire and warn Trump and warn his advisors and have a big effect and big pull, as the administrations have said and as the Democrats have said. They've come after Trump. They've sued Trump. They've had their operatives in there, and they see our stuff everywhere. Step into the zone of history and understand that you are the key. You are the variable. You are the Paul Revere's. You are the resistance. And this dog don't hunt without you.
Say, Pierce, I mean, it's like, I'm just kind of disgusted by the tone of this entire discussion. I mean, it's like as if we're debating Sidney Sweeney or something like that, but I got a general and a professional here who are, what are we doing? You're just trying to insult Vladimir Putin, insult Russia. It's like the most childish, immature, just taunting. There's an actual war going on right now where hundreds of thousands of people have been dying, and there's a meeting coming up between the two leaders of the United States and Russia, as I said before, 90% of the world's stockpile of nuclear weapons. Let's all take this down a notch. Vladimir Putin has at least signaled recently that he will maybe is open to the idea of keeping the Donbass region, Donetsk and Luhansk, of getting a corridor to Crimea, and of leaving some of the other territory. Why are we not all pushing in that direction? And why this constant need to make these insults? You know, like, I don't know. I'm an American. I don't see why I inherently have to have beef with the Russian people. I think my government is corrupt. I think their government is corrupt. But to sit here and be like, you guys are a gas station with nothing. The Russian people have a great culture and a great history. Obviously, the Soviet Union was a menace and we had a real problem with them. But the Soviet Union's been gone for many decades at this point. And I just find that the kind of nature of this just insulting back and forth to be beneath the magnitude of this conversation. It is undeniable that the West did a lot to provoke this conflict. It's just undeniable. Our CIA director through all of Joe Biden's term, Bill Burns, was the one who wrote the Nyet Means Nyet memo, who warned Condoleezza Rice, do not keep pushing in this direction. And we continued pushing regardless. It's resulted in this catastrophe. Like I said before, Pierce, I'm not absolving Vladimir Putin of any responsibility. He launched this war and he's responsible for the destruction. But for God's sake, Pierce, you start this at the beginning asking, like, but what's the actual plan? Like, what's the military plan for how you can evict the Russians? Nobody here has anything. So what do you want to do? Let's try to negotiate an end to this so people stop dying. It is the best case scenario. And it's our only chance to get out of this at this point is if we can work out some deal. So for God's sake, let's try to push toward that. You know, with all of these wars, Pierce, you know, all the wars over the last 25 years of my life, it's always like the propaganda keeps on moving and moving and moving. There's a lot of bluster about who the good guys and who the bad guys are. But when you start the program by asking a simple question like, what is the exit strategy here? What is the plan? No one really has anything. No one has anything other than maybe we could keep sending weapons and money in, and this slow grind of people dying will continue. And Vladimir Putin will then, at the end of that, take the territory he wants. Let's try to negotiate an end to this nightmare that never needed to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what Neville Chamberlain did.
Shut up.
Just the dumbest, like, what are you, an 80 IQ Neville Chamberlain? That's right. Anybody ever arguing against war is always Neville Chamberlain. That is the one and only lesson of history, that appeasement never works and aggression is always right. Why don't you take some of the lessons from
appeasement? Appeasement doesn't work with a dictator. You obviously don't know Vladimir Putin.
Appeasement, we appease dictators all over the planet right now. I just said something that I actually meant, that I think was more than just surface level, and your response is with the dumbest, like, slogan. We appease dictators all over the world. We overthrow democratically elected governments and prop up dictators. What are you even talking about?
Absolutely fantastic stuff from Dave Smith, as always. And that's about as much respect as these guys deserve. And you know, it's a powerful example of just bashing through the form, right? Blasting through the way the discussion is supposed to go. I'm supposed to say you're Neville Chamberlain, and you're supposed to say, oh, never, no, I'm not. I would never appease the Nazis. Let's go to war with Russia. It's this absurd sloganeering that is like keeping us completely enthralled in these insane wars, and it's been going on my entire life. You're not with us, you're against us. We're going to bring them freedom, weapons of mass destruction. I mean, they just deploy these absurd and contextless statements, and then people bow to them, and finally people are just going, shut up, dude. Make an argument or shut up. Stop with this sloganeering. It means nothing and we're sick of it. Stop the wars. Stop giving me dumbass slogans to justify murdering people.
At TheAlexJonesStore.com, I bring you whatever I personally think is the best and the coolest. That's our marketing plan. This knife sells all day long in stores for $100 or more. We bought a whole bunch of them. We can sell it to you for $78. Stainless steel, blacked out, double-edged, razor sharp, 1776 on the hilt, high-tech scabbard, hooks on your belt, doesn't come out, is amazing, right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com for 40% off despite the fact it's selling out. And then this, World War II updated trench knife, 10 inches, razor sharp, stainless steel, Spartan, tip of the spear. You can get this massively discounted up to 40% off right now with the Blades and Bullion Super Sale at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And that goes for these four silver collectible coins that are selling out as well, up to 40% off right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. So take action.
Taking a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, it's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal, brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go to TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison today to get your Colostrum Plus. Bovine Colostrum Plus is the newest product on sale, up to 50% off. Make sure you're a VIP member. Keep us on the air and in the fight as we seemingly inch closer to some sort of, well, I don't know, conclusion or evolution in the various wars being waged around the world by us or on our behalf. There's a big summit with Russia. We would love to see some ceasefire agreement established. We'd love to see peace established. But it's looking like while we're simultaneously making overtures about peace from European countries and NATO to Israel and Iran, it seems like everybody's preparing for more war. So we'll see where this inflection point takes us. But to give us insight and understanding about this is Brandon Weikert. He is an author, geopolitical analyst, and educator who travels the country lecturing leaders in the U.S. military, academia, and business communities on current trends in geopolitics and high technology research and development. Follow him on X at WeTheBrandon and the website WeikertReport.com. He, of course, has been coming on the show regularly to, you know, give us updates and breakdowns on the state of the geopolitical conflicts that we report on every day. Brandon, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me. And the last time I was here, you and I were a little bit down because it looked like Trump had taken his silly pills and was starting to provoke Putin again. But I'm coming to you with a message of hope, which is something that I normally don't do, unfortunately. I'm very hopeful about this meeting between Trump and Putin in Alaska. I think we're going to be getting a conclusion of some kind. I don't want to say a peace deal. I don't know if it'll be a peace deal, but it's going to be a conclusion, I think, to the war. I think one way or the other, the war is coming to an end in the next 45 to 90 days. I think that the Russians clearly have won this war. It's a question of how much of Ukraine are they going to take. I think they're going to take everything up and including Odessa. And I think that Zelensky knows that his days are numbered. I think we're getting ready to remove him and replace him with Zeluzhny. And hopefully after that, after the Russians feel they've acquired what they need in Ukraine and we can kind of reset the tables here, hopefully we can start doing business with Russia to get joint development deals on rare earth minerals, because that's a key thing for us. China has us by the cojones right now, because they've got all the rare earth minerals that we need to build advanced technology. Russia has tens of millions of untapped cubic meters of rare earth minerals, as well as all the energy. And so we need to be talking about doing that with them. And if Ukraine's off the table, we can start doing that.
What a wonderful surprise, Brandon. What a wonderful surprise to hear you say that. And, you know, I've been seeing the headlines sort of hinting that that was the case, that this might be, you know, coming to an end. Things are not looking so peachy for old Zelensky over there. And I want to get into exactly what's behind all of this. But yeah, part of me is just, you know, we've sort of had the rug pulled from under us so many times. It's like, I'm not expecting anything to come of this.
Yeah.
Even though it looks like it might be something good, I'm like, we'll see. Cause you know, nothing ever good happens. I've just got this black-pilled mentality. So I'm very happy to hear you say that. I mean, what is behind this? I know we've got a couple, stories here like this. Russian troops pierce Ukraine's patchy defenses in Donetsk days before Trump-Putin's summit. This was only 21 hours ago. So they've broken through some, you know, major, goals for them, including a push towards Dobropila, the Ukrainian battlefield monitoring group. The Deep State reported Tuesday the town is around 12 miles north of the key strategic city of Pokrovsk, has been in the Kremlin's crosshairs for more than a year. So basically they're making advancements. Zelensky comes out and says, well, this is Russia. Just they want to put on a show before this Trump, meeting so they can act like they're winning. I mean, it seems like they're winning. It also seems like
they're winning.
I mean, Zelensky's also facing a ton of, upheaval in his country, a lot of protests breaking out, corruption, probes going on there. How much does that have to do with it? Why now are we seemingly closer to peace than ever before? What has changed in this equation?
Well, very technically, we're out of weapons. We can't give them any more than we've given them. So you'll remember a few weeks ago when Netanyahu came in to see Trump and the whole Epstein thing happened and the very odd things going on there. But you'll remember Trump surprised the room when he said the first night that Netanyahu was here at that dinner, he said, oh, we're giving weapons to Ukraine. And Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, kind of looked over and I'm like, what? Because... Just 48 hours before that, Elbridge Colby, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, did a mandated review of all of our critical stockpiles of weapons, and the Pentagon, it was an apolitical assessment, they determined that, in fact, not only had we depleted stockpiles of key weapons that we need, but we've actually gone below what's known as war reserve status. And what that means is you start dipping into war reserves. First of all, our defense industrial base is not what it once was. We can't replenish those systems anytime soon. Second of all, if you're going into war reserves, that means there's nothing left on the shelves. And when we need those weapons, they won't be there. And so I think that is what's going on here is I think Trump gave one more tranche a few weeks ago of weapons to the Ukrainians. It wasn't as much as we promised we would give them. And that's a tell right there. And I think now we're really at depletion here. And I think that even Trump knows this and that he can't give any more weapons. And I think the Russians know this. And in terms of being on the ground, the Russians have not lost any territory the entire war. They have held on to the entire portion of the country that they covet, and they have held on to it for years. They have reinforced those positions, and now the Ukrainians have thrown everything in the kitchen sink, including the kitchen sink, at the Russians, and the Russians have not really been deterred at all. Now the Ukrainians are out of guys, and now we're running out of weapons to give them. So just by default, the war is coming to an end. Putin knows this. The Russians keep a very close eye on these things in terms of our war reserves. I think Trump is going to Elmendorf, which is the Air Force base in Alaska. This isn't really going to be a negotiation. This is going to be basically Putin saying, look, this is what I'm willing to do. Can you meet me there? And I think Trump at the end of the day is going to do that because he wants to do business with Russia on more important issues. And Ukraine is just not important anymore to him.
Well, and here's the headline from CNN just a few days ago. New Pentagon policy could divert weapons built for Ukraine back into U.S. stockpiles. Again, echoing what you were just saying about the fact that we've depleted our own reserves to a dangerous degree. And now we're realizing, hey, these weapons were built specifically for Ukraine. We're like, we can't send them to Ukraine. We need them here. We need to keep our stockpiles at least somewhat full. We can't be sacrificing our own safety on the altar of Ukraine. Now, one Whatever happened to the deadline? I'd like completely forgotten about it until just now as you're talking. I'm like, wait, wasn't there a deadline that Trump put forward and he was going to send the big missiles to Ukraine and this and because and it was so weird. He always says he's like, I talked to Putin and he's so friendly and we get along great. And then he bombs Kiev the next day. And it's like, yeah dude, he's not going to just unilaterally stop waging a war because you're friendly with him. Like what was he even thinking was going to happen there? So, I mean, Russia this whole time is just acting sort of in accordance with the material reality on the ground and just
that's
going,
right.
We're winning. We're going to keep winning until you surrender. Like that's just how it works. So whatever happened with that deadline? Like didn't that pass a couple days ago?
Oh yeah. A couple days ago. And, if anything, it was obvious it was always for show.
Right.
And I was on another program several weeks ago on Real America's Voice. And I was telling them the deadline means nothing. It's Trump putting on a show for NATO and for the media in the West. He's trying to keep them off his back. The reality is we're running out of stuff. Putin knows it. Trump knows it. Trump is not invested in this war. He's trying to figure out a way out. Putin's going to give him a way out in Alaska to, on Friday. And so we're going to see an end. Now, what does that mean? That means probably whatever survives of Zelensky controlled Ukraine is going to be a rump state. But it's not going to be our problem. We're out. And this is the end. And I think that's why you're seeing on social media, all the NAFO bots are going absolutely ape over this. The Europeans, I saw an article about this morning, how the Europeans are having a Zoom call with Trump right now because they're not invited. Good. We don't need them meddling. I did a debate a few weeks ago with Sir Michael Fallon, who was the defense secretary at the UK under David Cameron. And he basically admitted that the hope is that the British can deploy peacekeepers into Ukraine, in order to get them shot at or killed by the Russians so they can then demand Article 5. So our European friends are not really our friends. So Trump needs to get this over. And I think it will get done in, I think we're going to have a deal probably very soon, and it's over, and Russia's won, and you know, we need to move on from this now.
I agree. You know, clearly, you know, NATO is not ready to let this go quite yet. I think we're very much in the realm of false flag territory, trying to bring us in, you know, even more closely. At the same time, you have, you know, noise about Israel planning the next Iran attack. I wanted to ask you about that in just a little bit. Yeah. I mean, and it is. It is very funny. I have the headlines here. Europe and Ukraine launch last ditch diplomatic drive ahead of Trump Putin summit. A virtual summit will include Trump alongside the leaders of Ukraine, Germany, France, Britain, Finland, Italy, Poland, and the European NATO and European Union and NATO. And then Zelensky's on this Zoom call as well. So they held a last minute, last ditch Zoom call meeting, and that's as close as Zelensky's getting to these negotiations. Again, just a weird kind of setup where there's a Ukraine Russia war. And it's, you know, it's being decided at a summit between the U.S. president and the president of Russia in Alaska.
At a military base in Alaska where nobody's getting in and nobody's getting out until it's over. And it just shows you our greatest allies again. Here we go. Our greatest allies. We can't even trust them to be in the same room because they're going to meddle and they're going to do these horrible things because they want war. So, no, I think that's the tell. I think, look, and I also think the reason the Europeans are so desperate right now is because they know that this is the diminishment of NATO, and that's really their only card remaining in terms of being considered a great geopolitical power.
Right.
This is the end of Europe as a geopolitical force, and they're willing to go to war in order to make sure that they remain involved in global politics in any meaningful way. And this is it for them. They're not going to be involved much longer.
Yeah, which is so weird because they don't have the capacity to be involved in the first place. They've shut down their industrial base more or less. So, I mean, they aren't producing weapons. They don't have strong land armies. So it's like they're desperate to cling onto this thing that they don't even have in the first place.
That's right.
It's just crazy. So, what I've heard is that Putin is basically just going to ask, you know, these territories that we've conquered, Luhansk and Donetsk, they need to be sovereign Russian territory, and that needs to be established. What else is Russia demanding? What is the U.S. demanding? What are the terms of this negotiation going into it?
Well, I actually think it's interesting. I still maintain a lot of relationships with people in Russia. And one of my contacts said, look, Putin is actually being the reasonable one here because the Russian people, and, you know, we keep hearing about, oh, the Russian people are oppressed. Well, apparently the Russian people, majority of them, not only support the war because so many of their kids and loved ones have been killed fighting now,
right.
They actually want Putin to go in and, quote, flatten Kyiv tomorrow. Right. They want it to mean something. And so Putin actually coming to negotiate is actually kind of risking his rule because he's got the support of the Russian people for the most part. They want to wipe everything out now because so many Russians have died. But I think that what this means is that Putin is going to get the eastern part of Ukraine. I think he's probably going to get formal recognition from us, or he's going to work toward that, for the annexation of Crimea, which occurred in 2014 under Obama. It's not a Trump problem. It's not a Republican problem. That was a Democrat problem, and they didn't resolve it. So that's what he wants. And I do think, though, the Russians are going to try to take everything up to and including Odessa in order to ensure that the rump Ukrainian post-war state is completely landlocked and is basically a welfare case for Europe, which it will be. It already is, but it's going to be now more formally. And there'll be a new leader. I think we're working behind the scenes. The U.S. is to remove Zelensky either, you know, peacefully or by killing him. One way or the other, Zelensky is going to take over, who's much more reasonable, I think.
That's what I was wondering. So I saw these protests breaking out in Ukraine, and I was speculating, okay, is this because USAID got defunded? And so, you know, whatever propaganda was keeping a lid on things isn't there anymore, and people are just going out and protesting for the first time. Or is this like, you know, a color revolution to fix the problems from the last color revolution? Are we now overthrowing Zelensky in the same way that we overthrew Zelensky's predecessor? Like, what's going on? What's behind these protests in Ukraine? Do you have any insight into that?
I think there might even be rival factions of our CIA that are fighting each other right now. We know that it's not a monolithic entity. I know several CIA guys who are very pro-Trump. They're not the majority, obviously, but, you know, you've got a lot of competing interests. Doge really did a big favor in the sense that it highlighted all of the corruption and the problems. But this wouldn't be the first time, Harrison, that we removed a friendly or allied leader in the middle of a war. We did this to Diem in during the Vietnam War. Remember, we assassinated him, and he was the leader of Vietnam. This is the sort of thing we do all the time, where we start killing our own guy on the ground because he's not exactly doing what we want. And certainly Zelensky has been pilfering our money and using it to buy real estate for him and his wife and his mother-in-law all over the world. There you go. The Diem coup in Vietnam. So that was, I actually keep saying, and I said this in my book, there's a lot of similarities between what's going on in Ukraine right now, what went on in Vietnam. And that's scary, including having U.S. advisors on the ground. Cause those guys are not just staying in the friendly part of Kyiv and training. I think those guys are going out and fighting as well. In fact, I know one of them who was killed, on the front lines.
So many similarities to that. But although it appears as though we're sort of learning our lesson from history, because as you're describing, the Russian population, they're sort of engaging this in a form of a sunk cost fallacy. If we spend so much money on this, we got to keep going. We got to spend more because we got to get, you know, our money's worth to, you know, turn a phrase.
But well, and in many ways, look, in many ways, Russia's actually done very well in the war from a material standpoint. They have survived and they've thrived in the face of the economic sanctions. Mark Rutte, the head of NATO, admitted 3 months ago or 4 months ago, he said, look, NATO is producing in 1 year that which Russia produces in terms of weapons, that which Russia produces every 3 months.
Wow.
Before the war, this was not possible for Russia. Russia was just a gas station, with nukes. Actually, Russia's a very serious country. It's a real country. And now, by the way, as my Russian friends say, hey, look, we took on all of NATO and we're winning. Right. That's scary. That's scary.
Ukraine's ask in Alaska, a lasting ceasefire, security guarantees, and billions in Russian payment. That's the headline from Politico. Kyiv is afraid to be left out of negotiations, which they are, while Trump might strengthen Putin just as Russia is beginning to feel the strain of war. So it does seem like it's coming to an end. I want to ask you about some other geopolitical stuff with Iran and Israel in just a second. So as a final word on Ukraine, we're going to be watching this summit with, a very distinct interest. We hope that a peace agreement comes out of it. What's your best and worst case scenario for the outcome of this summit?
My best case scenario is this actually leads to a real end of the conflict. And we can build off of that, doing those deals I talked about on rare earth mineral and really working Russia into our camp rather than China's. The worst case scenario, look, either way you look at it, Russia's winning. Mm. The worst case scenario out of this is basically Trump is left with nothing and Putin is just going to march on whatever part of Ukraine he wants. And then from there, that worst case scenario becomes even scarier because that's when NATO could then come involved and try to get Article 5, which is what ultimately Zelensky and NATO want. They want us basically in a direct shooting war with nuclear armed Russia. I don't think it's going to come to that. I think we're going to get some kind of a deal. And, you know, I think we're going to be able to move beyond that. But I think after this, I think the Middle East is going to erupt in a major war again. That's what I think this is. We'll settle the European conflict and be in the Middle East again.
And be able to focus our time and resources on that objective.
On another peripheral war.
To nobody's benefit. And of course, you know, through all of this, as absurd as it all is, I mean, the Ukrainians have paid this horrible price for being our puppet. I mean, how many of their men have been killed? Entire generations have been wiped out. Yeah. More generations have fled the country, probably never to return. They have been, and now as you point out, they're going to be basically consigned to being a rump state of little to no importance with no access to water, and therefore their trade massively restricted. Some of their most, important provinces given over to Russia because of the mismanagement of all of this. I mean, the Ukrainian people have really been screwed in this deal, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. They've been screwed royally. It's horrible. It's a tragedy. It's a disaster of our own making, as the title of my book says. It literally is. We caused all of this to happen. It didn't have to happen at all. In fact, the Russians, and I document this in my book, and I know there's another even better book. I didn't know about it at the time. It was Scott Wharton's book. But you know, Wharton's book and my book both show that there were multiple attempts by the Russians to not have this go kinetic. And the Biden regime, I think, wanted it to go kinetic. Certainly the British did. And they thought as one general told me, I briefed the Pentagon pretty frequently, as you know. I had a two-star general tell me back in mid-2022 as the war was going on, don't you understand, Mr. Weikert, we're bleeding the Russian army in the field for free. And I told him, I said, it ain't for free. I mean, there's a lot of people paying the price for this, including the Ukrainians, especially the Ukrainians. And they will never be able to rebuild the way that, you know, Russia will be able to rebuild.
Absolutely brutal. And of course, American taxpayers are on the hook for all of it. It's just,
oh, we're just dumping money in there left and right. Like we've got it, you know?
It's absurd. It's just completely ridiculous and insane. But we don't have too much time, but this is the story that was published yesterday. The next Iran-Israel war is coming. Yeah. Both countries' strategic calculus suggests it will be even more violent. I think all of us saw this coming ever since the big kerfuffle a few months ago with Israel attacking Iran. We bombed Iran, and then it settled down. But I don't think any serious person thought, well, that's it. It's over. It's like, nope. What's coming next? When are they going to launch the next attack? What do you think Israel's plan is here? They're trying to go into Gaza. They're calling up 400,000 reservists to try to deal with that. They're going to start a war in Iran at the same time. They can't even handle Gaza. Well, what do you think is the plan here?
Well, I think Israel's bitten off more than they can chew. I think, and this is always timed with some kind of problem for Netanyahu politically. This is a classic wag the dog scenario, right? I feel like I'm watching Bill Clinton in 1998 bombing an aspirin factory because the Lewinsky scandal is breaking out in the media. So this is timed for his next political crisis. I think they're going to get bogged down in a counterinsurgency campaign in Gaza. It's not going to go well. They don't have enough troops. Remember, they're also tied down holding territory in Syria. They're also still dealing with the threat from Hezbollah in Lebanon. And they are trying to maintain this air corridor over Iran, which is very far away. So you're right. This is a lot of stuff they're taking on. Ultimately, it's going to be them calling Big Brother in America to clean up their mess, as is always the case. And because I suspect Donald Trump is in the Epstein files on some level, we're going to be there. And so I believe probably by September-ish, we're going to have another round of conflict that will probably involve the United States even more, especially if we're drawing down from Ukraine, because God knows we're not allowed to have peace in this country. We shift over to the next war. I think in probably this fall, we're going to have another outburst of violence. And I think that ultimately, if we can get Russia on our, you know, in a good place with diplomacy, we might be able to not have this breakout in the Middle East into a world war, because Russia ultimately is sort of the kingmaker for Iran. If Russia is being cut into deals, not just peace deals, but the Zangzur corridor in Azerbaijan, that might prevent this thing from going into a world war. But we're going to be seeing massive conflict this fall.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait for the outcome of this, summit in Alaska, and that'll really set the table for the wider geopolitical chess game. Stay tuned to Brandon Weichert at We The Brandon on X, WeichertReport.com. Thank you so much for joining us once again, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll continue to cover whatever I believe the most accurate, truthful news is, no matter what the effect is on me. And then you simply decide whether or not you want to back the undisputed OG organization of the last 31 years in the fight against the globalists. We had great success within 3 years of me getting on air on Access TV, the local radio that's syndicated. It's all hand of God on it, working through you.
You're working with the foreign banks and the military-industrial complex. This is all their idea.
You can follow people around. You can harass people. You can back up your banks, your buddies. But a revolution of peaceful information is coming, and when it comes time, you people are going to be brought to punishment.
You're lying to the public. It's disgusting.
This is reality. Truth is stranger than fiction. And I know my best work is ahead. And I know the tribulations we've been put through are part of God's larger plan. And I've learned a lot. And I've learned to be beyond humble and understand this is a sacred mission. But you're part of your own destiny and your own sacred mission. You better know good and evil's real. And you better know the devil's second biggest trick was convincing the world he didn't exist. His biggest trick is convincing the world good doesn't exist. Because I know that I'm a fallen creature. And I'm a sinner, and I have my struggles. But I love God, and I love justice, and I love truth. The globalists are the cheaters, the liars, the insecure ones. And it's time for us to recognize evil, recognize cheating, recognize fraud, and oppose it no matter who it's coming out of. Attack the sin. What alternate universe is this? What planet did I wake up in? Attack the lies.
And you, Congressman Deutsch, are a liar and a fraud.
And that's why I've been the most attacked. All hell broke loose when I stuck a Bohemian Grill. I was the only person at that time to read a Photoshop. When I made films about the USS Liberty, all hell broke loose. When I made films about 9/11 being an inside job, instantly, all hell broke loose. I was put under a national security investigation with the CIA and FBI directed, you find dirt and you put that guy in prison.
They also want to hear from Alex Jones. He was subpoenaed by the bipartisan House committee investigating the insurrection.
But because the country and the grand juries were completely corrupt, because of the grace of God, not because of anything I did, I've been protected. That's why I have no fear. Only the fear of failure. Only the anger that I'm not stronger. And that's why I ask you to support us in your word of mouth, your prayer, and financially. Because I am only as strong as you make me. I am a weapon of truth and war against tyranny in your hands. And I ask you to wield me. My only desire is to overthrow tyranny. My only desire is to unlock minds.
I've got one that can see.
My only desire is to empower humanity. My only desire is to seek the truth, because God is truth. I have been tempted by the devil himself, and only by the Holy Spirit have refused it. Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at TheAlexJonesStore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I asked Brandon Weicker to stay with us for a few minutes to get a little further into Israel and Iran, since we just barely touched on it in the last segment. I think it's worth a little bit more investigation, considering it seems like things are, well, things are developing one way or another, and hopefully Brandon can shed some light as to exactly what that looks like. You can follow Brandon on X at WeTheBrandon, and his website is WeikertReport.com. And he, of course, is a regular on this show, bringing us high-level analysis of geopolitical events. So the latest out of Israel is they are both going into Gaza full force. Let's see, I have the article here. Zamir approves outline for Gaza City offensive. IDF Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Eyal Zamir, has approved the general outline for the military's upcoming major offensive to conquer Gaza City, the IDF says. And at the same time, it's sort of, it seems like a foregone conclusion at this point. They're going to go to war with Iran as well. You've got foreign policy, you know, writing headlines like, you know, will Trump take part in the next war between Israel and Iran? So it's not even a question to them. It's not speculation. It's a foregone conclusion. There is going to be a war. The only question is whether Trump, not even whether Trump, how much Trump will be involved in it. What is Israel doing, man? I mean, what are they thinking right now? They can barely handle what they've got going on in Gaza. The whole world seems to be turning against them. You've got Australia, France, England. They're all recognizing Palestine as a legitimate state now, which is frankly a very ironic outcome of all of this. If the outcome of the last two and a half, or, you know, year and a half of conflict is that Palestine gets a state and the two-state solution comes to fruition, I mean, that would be a major twist of fate. What is happening? What is happening in Israel, Brandon?
I really am convinced that this is a, sort of a cross between, like I said before, this sort of political concern. Netanyahu's trying to stay in power. Shin Bet, their FBI, is coming hard after him for corruption, obvious corruption. And so he's trying to do that. But there's also this, very radical, ideology, you call it Zionism, Likudnik party, politics, whatever, that really buys into this greater Israel project, which basically says they're going to reclaim for the Jewish people, a lot of territory in the Middle East. But they don't have the numbers to do it. I mean, this is really, just set aside whether you agree with it or not, this, again, this goes down to logistics. They don't have the numbers to actually accomplish these lofty goals, these revanchist aims, that they seem to be setting for themselves, or at least the Likud party, seems to be setting. And I would just add this. I speak to a lot of IDF types. I've interfaced with a lot of IDF leaders, a lot of retired IDF people here in the States. I have yet to meet a single one of these IDF people, the leadership type, who actually believe this is a good thing that's going on. In fact, the IDF is very concerned that their forces, rightly, are being strained and stretched. And they're worried about, hey, if we strain and stretch our forces here, what's going to happen when, say, Hezbollah really comes online and starts popping off all those precision-guided munitions they've been stockpiling for a decade? What happens if Iran does decide to fire all these hypersonic and advanced weapons that they have that they've kind of not been doing in the last couple months? What happens if we really get hit hard? What happens if the Houthis go full bore against us with their hypersonic weapons, the Fatah 2? So the IDF is not, despite what they're saying publicly, Netanyahu's problems where his own generals are very skeptical. They're going to do it because they're ordered, but they're very skeptical that they can do this. And I don't even know what conquering Gaza means. It's a broken city. It's like Mogadishu. It's completely right. Shattered. What are you conquering? You're conquering rubble. So, that's what's going on here, though, ultimately is the greater Israel project. And I think they really, really, and I think to some degree, Israel's not wrong. They are threatened by Iran. But the problem is they can't really hit Iran the way they want to without U.S. backing. And that's where the problem comes in, is what is Trump going to do? And I think Trump is in the Epstein files. I think that was a Mossad CIA operation, MI6 operation. And I think the president is on some level compromised by it. So I think we'll be there too.
I hope not. I mean, the message you get to Trump is like, dude, we don't care. Don't start World War III. Don't kill 10,000 people just to save your reputation. You would be a hero for sacrificing your own reputation. Let them release the blackmail. We will support you as long as we know that you're willing to take this on stop World War III from breaking out.
Look, America first means America first. That's what I keep telling people. America first. It's not America, and this. It's America first. So it's not in our interest. Bottom line, it's not in our interest to be in the middle of a Zionist versus Islamist fight. Let them figure it out. We'll go and worry about other more important things closer to home. That's my view.
Well, it's interesting you compare Gaza to Mogadishu. I guess Mogadishu's in Somalia, but Israel is engaged in negotiations to potentially deport Palestinians to South Sudan. So, you know, I guess it's not much of an improvement one way or the other. But, you know, you want to know what their plan is. Apparently, that's it.
Yeah, well, and even trying to possibly deport them here. And I hope we're not stupid enough to accept any more refugees. You know, this whole thing is completely out of hand. The establishment in D.C. is not operating in a very sane or rational manner. They haven't for a while. The only saving grace here, and I say this unfortunately, is that we have depleted our stockpiles, and they won't be getting replenished anytime soon. So on some level, the U.S. military is going to go to the president and say, Mr. President, even if you want to go full bore against Iran, we literally can't. And so at the end of the day, we're going to be defeated by depletion. And that might actually be a good thing because it gets us out of the Middle East then. But unfortunately, that's where things are going because our leaders do not live in reality. They don't understand that the American people don't want to fight in the Middle East, and we don't have the means to do it anymore.
Right. Right. And it's just, I mean, if you want to really just do the final death blow to Israel's reputation in America, I mean, have them, you know, fulfill the plans when it comes to war with Israel. And, you know, there's the greater Israel patch on the IDF, you know, uniformed soldier. And we've been talking about this forever. I mean, my argument back when I, you know, debated Michael Tracy about this before the election last year, my argument was very simple. It was Israel has this greater Israel plan. It cannot achieve that without the manpower of the United States. That is her ultimate goal, to get American boots on the ground. And I thought Trump was the best option because, you know, despite Kamala Harris's, you know, Democratic obligations to speak out against what's happening in Israel, Trump was the one that will not commit to American boots on the ground for Israel when that's what they need. They don't need American airstrikes. I mean, they help, but what they need is the manpower on the ground to actually maintain control over greater Israel. They cannot do that with the manpower they have now. It would require America to do that. And I don't think Trump is willing to put Americans in harm's way like that. At least I hope not. But this was always considered a conspiracy theory. And if you talked about greater Israel, you know, you were an anti-Semite, which is shocking because as of yesterday, quote, Netanyahu says he's on a historic and spiritual mission, also feels a connection to the vision of greater Israel. So he just told I-24, a television station in Israel, that he is attached to this vision of greater Israel and is on a historic and spiritual mission to fulfill it. So I guess not an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory after all, Brandon.
No, no, absolutely not. And they've spoken openly about it since 1948. And, you know, look, my view is if you guys are going to do that, that's on you. It's not our problem. We shouldn't have any. That's not an American problem. That's a Middle East and Israeli problem. And the rational thing to do would be to say, we're not just going to participate in any of this. Good luck and God bless. You know, but it's not our problem. Unfortunately, as you're pointing out, right, they need our manpower to do it. And I think it's interesting, in 1991 in Desert Storm, the Saudis basically used us to stop Saddam. And I know for a fact, and I say somebody who's friendly with Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia looked at our troops as mercenaries. They were expendable. They weren't good enough because they were Christian. Well, unfortunately, the Zionists are viewing U.S. troops the same way. They want to use us basically as mercenaries, pay off our leaders, get blackmail on our leaders, manipulate them into sending our kids to go fight for not a war in our interest. And it's all in service to what is not necessarily an American vision or interest in the Middle East, which is creating this new ethno state out of, the former Arab lands or whatever. And again, that's, if Israel can do it on their own, then that's their problem. But to include us is frankly ridiculous. It's not in our interests.
I agree. And you even have these incredibly, just to your point, I think it was Mark Levin explaining to everybody, well, losing.
Screaming, you mean?
Yes. Scream explaining to everybody. Exactly. losing one IDF soldier is like losing 1,000 American soldiers. And it's like, Why would we ever participate in something with somebody that thinks like that? You literally, you just don't care about American soldiers. 1,000 of them can die, and it means as much to you as one IDF soldier dying. And that's your pitch for us to join you in this fight? It's offensive to me.
It is. Well, Mark Levin is spittling and spraying the screen with his, anger and his love of, look, I don't have a problem with Israel, but that, you know, they need to worry about their own business and not include us in, you know, we have other interests. And I think it's very important to note in May, Trump had that great speech in Riyadh. The Arabs did these incredible business deals with the United States, specifically not bringing in Israel, which is, you know, showing you that whatever they're saying publicly, the Arabs are plotting a post-Israel Middle East, which if you're an Israeli, that's a very bad thing. You want to be integrated into the Middle East. You want to be doing business. You want to have them having your back. So the concern that I have is what you pointed out earlier. The ironic end point of this conflict that Israel is engaging in is that Israel's in a worse position than it was on 10/7. And that's right. The tragedy here is that their leaders have completely taken them down a really bad path that I don't know how they're going to be able to recover from.
Yeah, I don't either. And I guess just as a final question for you, going back to what you were saying about the threats that Israel faces, I mean, they're the same threats they've always faced. And I'm sort of baffled, not even that I want one outcome or the other. I'm just thinking strategically, if I'm the leader of Iran or if I'm the leader of Hezbollah, I start hitting Israel and I don't let up until it's over. Cause like, yeah. You know, with the last, you know, exchange where, you know, Israel and Iran were bombing each other. I mean, Israel was not doing so well. I mean, Iran was hitting them and it was hurting them and they were, you know, for like a week or so, it was like, oh man, this is looking bad for Israel. And then, you know, peace was established. Obviously, Israel's been replenishing its reserves. It's, you know, restocking its Iron Dome. So, like, I guess my question is, like, what is keeping these other countries at bay? Why is Iran being so, careful about this? Why didn't Hezbollah get involved earlier? Why isn't it really, you know, going now when it's at its most strength? Like, what does Israel do to keep all of these forces at bay while it continues operations in Gaza? What's happening behind the scenes or what am I missing here?
The thing you're missing is Russia. Russia is the only reason, and I wrote about this 2 years ago at the Washington Times, because everybody was asking, why hasn't Iran just followed through on their threats? Is it that they can't? No, I think the actual answer is they are beholden to Russia for military and economic support, and the Russians have been keeping them on a tight leash because the Russians have been wanting to do business deals with the United States. Mm. But this is why it's so important what's going on in Alaska, because if it looks like the Americans and Trump go off the deep end and say, screw you to Russia, and then we don't do any deals or don't leave the door open, at that point, my friend, you're going to see a much different Iranian response when the next round of violence begins. But if we keep Russia in our tent peeing out rather than outside peeing in, we will be able to probably avoid a major retaliation from Iran, because Iran has the capacity. Look, Iran has missile cities underground. Iran has, and they've been replenishing with the help of Russia, their defenses. They've got a lot of capabilities. And the only reason that they haven't been able to use them was partly because Mossad did a very good job of sabotaging them at the start of the last war, the 12-day war, but also because Russia's been holding them back. But the moment Russia feels they can't get a deal with us, they're going to let the Iranians off the chain and let the pieces fall where they may. And that's going to be a very bad day for Israel, because Iron Dome cannot stop hypersonic missiles. They can't.
Right. And we saw that evidenced with the strikes that Iran
from the Houthis.
Out. Well, from the
wasn't
Houthis
even
and
from,
the Iranians. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the scary thing. And that, you know, you can cripple Israel economically by going after their three ports and their only major airport, which is Ben Gurion International. And that's what the Houthis and Iranians were doing. You don't even need to, you know, really target anything else other than the ports and the airport, and you've shut down their economy.
Well, they have all of their critical infrastructure in this one little, you know, triangle in Israel. And it's so vulnerable, which is why, again, just purely strategically, I'm just like, what is going on here? So that is interesting. So just again, just to clarify and solidify it, let's say there's two possible outcomes of the Russia summit. Either there's sort of a path to peace and a ceasefire and signs that things will be slowing down and coming to an end in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia. And then I guess there's the outcome where there's no settlement and Trump starts sending the big missiles to Ukraine and they're bombing Moscow. So, if peace is established or ceasefire is established, if a road to a conclusion in Ukraine is established, what's the outcome versus the war continues, what's the outcome when it comes to Iran and Israel? Just lay that dichotomy. I know you just did, but real simply, which one?
Yeah, basically, if we can get some kind of a deal on Ukraine with Russia, we can build off of that, and we can basically then create connected trade deals, particularly the Zangzir corridor in Azerbaijan, which Russia wants to be a part of, I think. So if we can cut them into that massive deal, what that will do is it will isolate Iran, but it will divorce Russia from Iran. So you can actually bring Russia into our camp, but it has to start with peace over Ukraine. It has to start with some end of the Ukraine war, because none of this happens if the war is still going on. So we can get that deal. You bring Russia into our camp. You flip them away from China. You get them isolated from Iran. They're making a lot of money, a lot of opportunities off of us. And then suddenly all the problems in the Middle East at best remain remain regional problems. They don't explode into a world war. If we don't get a deal, though, Russia has no incentive, none whatsoever, to stop the fighting in the Middle East. In fact, they probably want it to go more because they want us to be distracted even more from Ukraine if that war is still going on.
Wow. Well, a lot of writing on this, Alaska summit, you know, prayers to Trump and Putin to try to get an end to this, conflict. And, you know, people out there will mock, what's happened to World War III? And it's like, it's still hovering out there.
It's still there, man.
It's still looming over us like a sword of Damocles. Thank God we haven't, you know, tripped the wire yet and caused this to happen. But, we're still just sort of teetering on the edge. And, you know, there's so many forces that are against peace and have put so much work and so much effort into creating these wars. I worry about some sort of false flag to really, you know, drive us in deeper, especially when you got Netanyahu now talking about how actually none of the uranium in Iran was damaged and it still exists. We need to go in there. And I'm thinking, I mean, it seems like Israel's reputation is so bad. The American populace is so sick of wars in the Middle East. It would take something like, and I hate to even say it, it would take something like a dirty bomb going off in a U.S. city blamed on Iran. And at that point, it would be so chaotic. And the fear and fright would be such a high level. Everybody turned to the media. They'd be telling you, don't worry, folks, we're going to go after him. We're going to get Iran. And that's how you get the next big war. So I think without a major false flag attack, I don't see them ginning up the public support for war with Iran. But I also don't see them getting away with an attack. So, the end of all of this, I think the information war is the ultimate in that people are not falling for the slogans anymore. They're not falling for the talking points. And even if we were false flagged, I think more people would be suspicious of Israel and the United States government than they would to believe them that it was Russia or Iran. So I think we're winning the information war, Brandon. That's the real good news.
Oh, I think you are. I think InfoWars definitely is at the tip of that spear. And you guys have done a lot of good work, making people think for themselves.
Well, all I know is I'm going to feel real stupid if we go to war with Iran.
Well, me too. But
the bombing was bad enough, but at this point, I think we can say that it was controlled. It was largely symbolic.
So it was a chicken run. It was a chicken run. Yeah. It was for show. Trump did that for show. If he can stay out, it's a genius move. If he gets sucked back in, you know, he's taking his silly pills again.
Taking his silly pills. That's one way to put it. Brandon Weikert, thank you so much for being with us today at We The Brandon on X. Website, WeikertReport.com. Keep up the great work, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon. We'll have to see what happens with this Alaska summit.
Yes, sir. I'll see you next time.
All right, we'll see you next time. Brandon Weikert at We The Brandon on X. Very, very good stuff. And again, I mean, there's just so much news comes out about all this on just a continual basis. And I think I want to go to clip number 26 now because, I don't even know if I can because I think it needs to be censored. We'll go to it, but if the people are cursing a lot, we'll have to bring it down. But basically, you've got this huge class of congressmen going on recess, doing this emergency break because they don't want to vote on Epstein. They all get on a plane paid for by the ADL and jet off to Israel where they're all shaking hands and rubbing elbows with genociders in chief over there. And, you know, a lot of people are like, that's not a good move. They shouldn't do that. But on the other hand, this is what it was like if they stayed at home and actually did what they're supposed to, which is go back to their districts and talk to their constituents. Yeah, here's what this looked like. Clip 26. Right? Brian Steele, $130,000.
I want to have you address the question that was shouted about the starving children in Gaza.
So disappointed. I am so disappointed in how you represent us.
I don't think you're the right fit for us anymore. You just don't relate to most of us anymore, and you gotta know when to step down. I think it's time.
Yeah, so, you know, if choice between that and going on all expenses paid trip to Israel, courtesy of AIPAC, most people chose the AIPAC trip. And it just shows you sort of what's happening in the American populace right now. That is, you know, far from the first example we've seen of even Republican congressmen going back to their home districts and being shouted down and called genocide supporters by their own constituents because, well, they are and they deserve it. So things are changing in America, and it ain't looking good for the future of Israel, which means it ain't looking good for America, because Israel is pretty desperate and willing to do some pretty outrageous things. I understand Trump is live at Kennedy Center. We only have a few minutes left in this program, but let's go to Trump, see what he's talking about at the Kennedy Center ahead of the Alaska Summit.
They came from Asia. They came from South America, Venezuela in particular. They were coming in Trinidad, Aragua, and the toughest people you've ever seen. And by the millions, and for the last 3 months, we had zero, zero, and zero. We had zero people come in for 3 months. They respect our country again. That's the other thing. All over the world, our country is respected again. So I also want to thank the Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, who's fantastic. She's done an incredible job. And Sergio Gore for the job he's done with personnel. Thank you very much, Sergio. Fantastic. In the coming months, we'll fully renovate the dated and the infrastructure of the building and make the Kennedy Center a crown jewel of American arts and culture once again. I think we'll bring it to a higher level than it ever hit. Actually, it hit a certain level, but we're going to bring it to a higher level than it ever hit. We have the right location, and soon we will be a crime-free area. This is going to be a crime-free area, by the way. You'll be able to go out. People tell me they can't run anymore. They're just afraid. And they'll be running again. We're going to have a crime-free. It's a big statement, because if one thing happens all year, Pam, you better be good, because they'll say Trump did not fulfill this. One person gets a little injured by somebody, they'll say Trump did not fulfill his promise. No, we're going to be essentially crime-free. This is going to be a beacon. And it's going to also serve as an example of what can be done. We have to get rid of this cashless bail nonsense. If you look at New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, which is so badly run, Los Angeles, they can't get the houses. They can't get the people their permits to build their houses. They're trying to rebuild the houses from the ridiculous fire that should have never allowed to have taken place. They should have had the water coming down from the Pacific Northwest, but they didn't do that. But they can't get the permits for the people that want to build their houses.
So that's Trump live at the Kennedy Center, helping to honor the first Kennedy Center honor recipients, including KISS, Sylvester Stallone, George Strait, Gloria Gaynor, and Michael Crawford, receiving that honor with Trump there. Talking about his policies and how he's moving forward to make a safer America. And pointing out that it's the liberals' failures that have basically forced us to do this. And we wouldn't have to if they would just uphold the, you know, basic law and order and public safety for their constituents. Folks, go to thealexjonesstore.com to keep us on the air and in the fight. Try out the Bovine Colostrum Plus, an incredible new product at 50% off. Especially if you're a VIP member, go today, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison.
I've been hearing about this for years. And now it's all the rage. And about a year ago, they did a survey of the customers at thealexjonesstore.com and said, what is it you want the most? What product would you like to have? A lot of you got that email. And the number one thing was bovine colostrum. This is the highest rated, private labeled, 2,000 milligram per serving. And if you don't know what colostrum is, let me tell you. A cow's a mammal, we're a mammal. A dog's a mammal, a blue whale's a mammal. I know most of you know that. And mammals drink milk from their mother's breasts. The first milk of the first few weeks is called colostrum, and it's more clear, and it's full of all of the immunity and all the super nutrients, and it's basically God's vaccine. We've got the best bovine colostrum that we're introducing right now that you're going to find anywhere. Cellular recovery and defense matrix. It's also incredible for gut health and flora. Immune support, natural compounds strengthen your body's defenses against toxins and stress. Muscle recovery aid promotes faster tissue repair and reduces soreness post-workout or strain. Stress and energy balance delivers calm, focused energy with natural adaptogens, no caffeine crashes. Toxin defense supports detox pathways to flush out environmental pollutants and free radicals, enhance nutrient absorption, improves nutrient uptake for better overall health without fillers. It's a hassle. I mean, because you only get this for a few weeks after the cow has a baby. It's the next best thing to mommy's milk. So it's all the rage for years. Everybody's going totally insane about it. I'm going to be taking it. This is next level. And I'll be completely honest with you. Everybody's been telling me to take colostrum for years. It's hard for me to start taking a supplement. Once I do and it works, I stay on it. I'm going to be taking this. All I hear about is how great it is.